Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, that was close. I got a last-minute story, and of course I'm racing through stuff and throwing up websites and reading, and I realized I only had a couple minutes left before the show, so just running around, grabbing the water, getting into the desk here. I activated the show with about 42 seconds to spare, I think, and so it's one of those crazy mornings, but a lot's going on. We've got a new reporter. We've got Paulette Martin, who's going to join us again. She was on yesterday for what I thought was going to be a few minutes, but she was so much fun, I just kept her on and made the spontaneous decision to have her actually start Tuesdays, next Tuesday with her report. We still don't have a name for it yet, but it's alternative health, you know, foods that kill you, you know, all kinds of things like that, nutrition. We're going to do a bunch of other things as well. And it's going to be fascinating. And so, again, you know, with the folks that come here, they're never limited to just one topic, one thing. And just where they go is where they go. And that's what makes it interesting, because this show is always about possibilities, not limitations. So what happened immediately before I came on the air? I'm watching One American News, which is still my favorite news show. Although it's interesting, I got to talk to them about their economic reporting, because they're way, way, way too close to the national media socialist idea. That when they keep talking about the debt ceiling and how we have to you know, raise it, and some of the other things are just plain wrong. So there's a lot of stuff they're missing there. But this is something that I'm sure it's going to be a new story. They're very good on COVID coverage. I mean, exceptionally good. So they've been following a lot of the doctors that are trying to get the truth out there. And so something just happened literally before I came on the air this morning. And that was from, let me see if I can find the story here from this group. It's from the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. So apparently they created an ad. There's a little girl, she's 13 years old, she's a kid, and who was, I guess, parents or her or both of them volunteered her for the initial trials of one of the vaccine companies. Let me see if I can, let me just get rid of the story. So if you go to Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, and you'll see the breaking story, Comcast pulls vaccine injured ad. And it says 13-year-old Maddie DeGary, so that's M-A-D-D-I-E, and then D-E, and then G-A-R-A-Y, was injured after receiving, it was Pfizer, okay. Pfizer, we're going to do some stories on. I'm looking into them right now. What I'm finding about Pfizer that's really disturbing is that I did a little search yesterday on who's winning the vaccine wars, because these companies are at war with each other. There's so much money involved here. You know, it's like, who's going to be the vaccine company standing? Who's going to be the one that has the most power, the biggest bribes, the most influence, the most campaign contributions? So it looks like Pfizer's winning. I mean, you don't hear about Moderna much anymore. You don't hear about Johnson & Johnson, which made the mistake of making only one vaccine instead of two. You know, so they sort of cut their profits in half right there. I guess they thought they would save money by doing it one, and actually had a vaccine that was somewhat like a vaccine with actually, you know, using inert or at least, you know, dead actual DNA from COVID, as opposed to the other ones, which teach your body how to make it. Anyway, so this ad, Comcast agreed to run it, and then they pulled it. And so I thought, well, this is interesting. And so it's got to click here to read the full story. I thought I had the full story. So I can't play the ad over the air because it's copyrighted and you know, other things like that. But so you can go to the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation to find out. So like I say, here's the story. Okay. So the story is, and it says here, breaking, grieving mother appeals to you know, President Nobody ahead of the FDA meeting. Now, if you've been following the stories, you know that the vaccine manufacturer, or at least, you know, the COVID shot manufacturers are lining up to inject kids with something that they absolutely don't need, which is, you know, when kids statistically, their risk from COVID is zero. I mean, yeah, it's very, very slight. I mean, obviously some kids, you know, a few get affected, but statistically it's pretty much zero. So why you would push a chemical that can cause, you know, permanent heart injuries and death and cripple paralysis and everything else like that on kids that are statistically immune from something, that's just crimes against humanity. That's you know, genocide. You know, well, because I don't know, hopefully a lot of kids won't die from this, but at some point you have to realize that these people are only in it for the money, and they don't care how many people they kill. And that's what's so crazy about it. And the fact that the government not only tolerates this, but they're in the business with them. I mean, that's how bad it is right now. So you take a look at any Holocaust or spreading of disease through history, or any profit making off the misery of humanity. You know, this is like when our own government gave smallpox infested blankets to Native Americans. You know, what's the difference between that and injecting a so-called substance, calling it a vaccine, giving people the impression that A, COVID is fatal, which it isn't in 99.whatever% of the cases, and B, that the vaccine will save you from it, you're preventive, you're going to be safe, you're never going to get sick if you have this. You know, that's the other perception, and that's not true either. In fact, just the opposite is true, that the variants never came up until, of course, the vaccine was out there. Anyway, Gene's our producer. Do you want to get on this right now, or do we need to go into the article a little bit? Because I just find this so typical of what's going on right now. Have you heard about this before?
I've not heard about but I know I was bored last night, couldn't sleep, so I listened to over 2 hours of parents at a Loudoun, Virginia, or Loudoun School District in Virginia, the school board meeting, and they must be trying to push vaccine mandates, I don't know, on all the students or athletes, but it's just wrong. And it's just so sad, because how many people have children have now long-lasting major medical issues, physical issues because of getting it, compared to the amount of people that have died. And one thing is, or the biggest other thing is, why is an other outside entity dictating? And we know the school districts are getting money too, no doubt, from government organizations, whatever, that are pushing for it. But that's just wrong. The parents are the ones that should have the decision, make the decision. And if they want to make the decision, more power to them. But they're the ones that should have the ability to, especially with their older kids, talk it over with them if you want, but otherwise make the decision. But don't let government, other entities make the decision for you, because it's disheartening. And I talked to a grandparent yesterday that I didn't say a word, but because her daughter's a physician, and she said that because her one grandson gets sick a lot, as soon as he turns 12, that's the first thing she's going to do is take him to get her. The mother is going to take him to get the jab. And I'm like, oh my God, that is so sad. But, you know, she's a physician. She can make up her own mind. It's like, fine. But that's the parent making up the mind. But, oh my gosh. Yeah, I've seen videos on children, teens mainly. Well, yeah, teens that have gotten it. And that within a matter of hours to a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Totally different physical abilities. And, you know, we all know about all the especially the boys with the heart issues. Mm-hmm. That is tragic.
Yeah, and everybody's going along with it like it's okay. You know, the pharmaceutical companies are making money, so it's okay. The health bureaucrats, you know, Dr. Fascist, are going along with this because, you know, he's making money off it too. So it's okay. Congress still has no vaccine liability bills. We have one. They don't. They're never going to write one. And to them, that's okay. And you know, everybody consenting to this, you know, this Holocaust against our children, the scariest part is they have no conscience. You know, the whole point of Action Radio is that we have to do what they have refused to do and can never do because of the structure of the wealthy corporations funding the campaigns of their bought and paid for, you know, legislators. And so it's our job to write the bills that they won't, get them to them, and say, okay, well, you know, your election depends on you actually doing, you know, good stuff. And so our bills, you know, are open, honest, and, you know, are intended to create more freedom and, you know, a better situation for us against the powers that don't care, that think it's okay to inject five-year-olds with a substance that no one knows what it is. It can, you know, injure or kill them. And it's for a virus that isn't going to affect them. Or if it does, it's going to be incredibly mild. They might, you know, in most cases either won't notice they have it. You know, this goes to, I mean, everybody's been exposed to this virus. I knew back in March of 2020, you know, before they ever had the 15 days to slow the spread, that because I saw the article in a briefing in Congress, that a Japanese pharmaceutical executive who used to be a former U.S., you know, public health person, that's how it works, you know, from government to corporations, said everybody's going to get exposed to this multiple times. You know, so the idea that we're still in the middle of a pandemic, that you have to wear a mask to slow the spread's been going on since, what, January of 2020? And the disease peaked in April 15th and was pretty much gone by July 4th, you know, COVID Independence Day 2020. We're talking over a year ago until the CDC and the government brought it back. And they brought it back with the lockdowns and the stress and the mask mandates and then the vaccine to promote the variants. And every time this disease tries to die, the government brings it back. You know, now they're going to bring this is it's a self-perpetuating, you know, government industrial fascist marketing campaign.
Jeez. Well, and what really saddens me is you look at the numbers, the COVID deaths over the weekend. It was so sad. I talked to my cousins who lost their mother last year of COVID. The night before she died, they were talking to the doctor and the doctor said she has pneumonia. And then she got COVID. So she is not dying of COVID. She's dying of pneumonia.
Yep.
What happened? Guess. Death certificate, drum roll, COVID death. So they're inflating the numbers. The person would have, she died because of pneumonia. That's what brought her into the hospital, pneumonia. And then what happens? They lie about it on the death certificate. So, and we already know they've done that. But that's insane. It's so sad because these, and then I've talked to more than one family that this has happened to. And I know the one said that they know someone that sued because they know their family did not die of COVID. They died of cancer and they won that lawsuit. I don't know the person, but I talked to someone that does. And that's just downright wrong. And not that, I mean, your loved one is deaf. Does it really matter what the person died of? It matters when you're spreading false narratives and you're causing pandemonium.
It matters incredibly for statistics, for research, for everything that's, you know, and in fact, it matters because that was used against us. So what they do is they, apparently the CDC changes how they do their PCR tests. So in other words, when they want to present more cases to make it look worse, you know, they cycle it several times more, you know, up like 40, you know, to amplify the whatever, you know, minuscule amount of COVID there is. When they want to turn down the COVID positives, like when Biden was installed in the White House illegally, they turn it way down and show very few COVID positives. So this is all propaganda. This is all marketing. This has nothing to do with health. It never did. But death certificates are incredibly important because of all the epidemiological studies, the trends, the, you know, what do we look for? We look at death certificates to find out what's killing people. I mean, literally, so that we can prevent that and extend, you know, productive life however much longer we can. That's why, you know, people, these things are critically important. To list the wrong thing, you know, for your propaganda purposes, so you can all make money in the government, corporate, fascist, vaccine, mafia, that's insane.
Yeah, very sad. Very sad. Yeah.
Well, let me talk about the story a little bit here because it's really interesting. And it was, you know, October 25th, so very recently. This is from the source again, vaccine. Let me just get their source again here. Oh, this is CD Media. I'm taking the article from CD Media. I'm not sure who they are. Article written by CD Media staff, October 24th. Breaking, grieving mother appeals to, and I'll call him, you know, President Nobody, ahead of the FDA. So the FDA is trying to decide whether to give this to kids. Well, the decision is based on profits. It's going to be based on, you know, bottom lines. It's not going to be based on health. Or based on health, they never would have brought this to market. Anyway, this is a once vibrant 13-year-old daughter suffers debilitating injuries during Pfizer trial. And the mother's quoted as saying that Stephanie DeGary said, "You said it was safe." Well, I mean, I have a little skepticism. Why would you put your kid in a drug trial? I mean, call me crazy, but that to me is irrational. Anyway, it says, especially when there have been no animal trials, why would you make your kid the animal trial? I mean, that's basically what this mother did. Anyway, she says, after initially accepting 30-second TV ad featuring 13-year-old Maddie DeGary, Comcast attorneys pulled it at the last minute. Okay, here we go. So it says, a new television ad that spotlights Pfizer, there we go, that's the name again, Pfizer, vaccine-related injuries suffered by 13-year-old Maddie DeGary, was pulled late afternoon by Comcast attorneys. The ad, a direct appeal to insurrectionist Biden, was slated to begin airing on Comcast Saturday night during Saturday Night Live. That in itself is interesting. Then multiple times around NBC's Meet the Press also, continuing through the FDA's VRBAC, VRB PAC. The FDA has a PAC? What's that? Look, Gene, can you do, please, a really quick search, VRBPAC. Is that vaccine something PAC of the FDA? Wow. It's a meeting on Pfizer data for its COVID-19 vaccine for children 5 to 11. FDA and then VRBPAC. Yeah, bastards. Let's find out who these bastards are. Anyway, quote is, this should not be a political issue. This is a human rights issue. What if Maddie was your daughter? Well, absolutely. Well, if she were my daughter, she wouldn't have been in a drug trial, but that's me. Anyway, it says, I've waited 7 months for Pfizer or the FDA to acknowledge what happened to my daughter, and they haven't. This is the mother again, Stephanie DeGary. They tried to ignore her injuries. I had hoped with this ad we would finally have the chance to be in the room with them, to be seen by them, and for her voice to be heard. Instead, they silenced her. Okay, now if you see the ad, I saw part of it as it aired on One American News. It is absolutely heartbreaking. You know, you see pictures of this vibrant, active, healthy 13-year-old girl. You know, and then you see her screaming in pain in a hospital bed. Okay, I'm sorry. This is, again, it's irrational why you would put your daughter in a drug trial, first of all. Secondly, you know, the fact that this is all being blocked by government, they don't care. It shows you that the people that are doing this have no soul. There is no soul at the FDA, the CDC, or the NIH, especially with Dr. Fauci, who is, I believe, a genocidal psychopathic drug pusher. And I'll say it openly. You know, did you find anything, Gene? I'm curious.
No, FDA, not yet. Yeah. But the thing is, too, Biden, you talk about no soul. Biden has no soul.
No.
And you see what he's doing to this country, how he's treating illegals a hundred million times better than people that are law-abiding taxpayers of this country, actual citizens of this country. He has no soul for what he did to his children.
Well, he has no soul. Apparently, it comes out that he was the one that ordered our Air Force jets to take off with people with no identification, no verification, no vetting, no nothing, and leave. Apparently, there's over 400 Americans behind. You know, no jet. If Trump were there, no jet would have taken off until all the Americans were accounted for.
And
guarantee you that.
Still behind. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And the Afghani goat herders with their five-year-old wives would still be there instead of sitting in our country waiting for welfare.
Right. He sold his whole family, and you got to wonder, really, realistically, we all know who's running the country now, but who's paying Biden? I mean, what country is paying Biden?
China.
You can't tell me he's not getting money under the table because of all the crap he's doing here. He's got to get a payoff because that's all his whole entire life has been payoff.
Mm-hmm. Well, he said in an earlier quote, he's a prostitute. You know, for political purposes, is, yeah, I'll be a prostitute for, you know, the issues, whatever. And this is a quote from, it's either 20 or 30 years ago. You can look it up on YouTube, and I've seen it. So he has no soul. He doesn't care. His whole idea is to get money and power, and he doesn't care how he gets them, obviously. I mean, his whole family is dedicated, because the family's in it. The family business of the Bidens is political extortion, you know, and payoffs and bribery. That's what they did. That's their family business. Okay. So, I mean, this is why he was picked for this job, because he has no soul. He has no conscience. I don't think he's anywhere near as mentally deranged as he's being made out to be. That's the excuse. That's like saying that the policymakers in Washington who, you know, decided to abandon, you know, our troops and our weapons and our people there, they're just stupid and incompetent. No, they're not stupid and incompetent. Nobody's that stupid or incompetent. Well, maybe. But really, this is by design. And it's very easy to see the designs. You know, you look at, you know, ex-Prez Obama, who wanted as many, you know, Muslim folks here as possible to make America more Muslim. I mean, that's his goal. That's why the Somalis were brought in. That's why the Afghanis have been brought in. That's why he's running the Biden insurrection. I mean, who do you think spied on Trump first? You know, it was Obama. Used the government to spy on Trump back in 2015. So we know who's running things. It's Obama, Susan Rice, and his little court of you know, political insurrectionists. They don't care about this country. You know, we have a rogue administration. So the idea, again, of a expecting, you know, it's kind of an insanity to expect lawful actions that, you know, from an unlawful government. It doesn't work that way. Anyway,
right.
Let me finish this. Then I wanted to talk about China. I've got some more stuff on them too, or anything that you found also. And if there's more on this school board. So, well, let me get to that. Let me finish this first here. This is Stephanie, who was – that's the mother – who has voted Democratic. in the last two elections. Well, see, there you go. You know, you bought in, you took the Kool-Aid. Sorry, darling, but you sacrificed your daughter to Democrat Party propaganda. And she says, quote of the daughter, she wanted, or quote of the mother, she wanted to help others to help the world get back to normal. Well, see what happens when you get bad information? The world was normal before. It will be normal again. But COVID, you know, if you want to get the world back to normal, you arrest Dr. Fascist, the whole health bureaucratic cabal, and the executives at the drug companies for pushing something they knew was dangerous, and you'll lock their asses up. That's how you get back to normal. You know, you have full product liability on vaccine manufacturers. You sue the hell out of them. That's how you get back to normal. You don't get back to normal sacrificing your daughter to a drug trial that should have been done with animals first and everything else first, and that should have been done for 10 to 15 years, you know. The mother's really responsible here. You know, you can't – I mean, obviously what happened to her daughter is a tragedy, but 13-year-old kids are not responsible for themselves. You propagandize them. You tell them they're saving the world. You tell them they're going to help people get back to normal, and you give them to their drug trial. What kind of sick mother would do that? Now, sorry. It disgusts me. You know, let me put it this way. The drug companies came to me and said, well, we'd like to use your 13-year-old daughter in a drug trial. F you, Biden, and anybody else that comes and tries to say that to me. No, it's not going to happen. Okay. Anyway, so it says she received her vaccine on January 20th. Oh, that's interesting. Installation day. And came into the room in the middle of the night, said she didn't feel right and couldn't sleep. She'd been waiting 8 months to be acknowledged by Pfizer, the FDA, the CDC, and has not even received acknowledgement from any of them, not an email, a phone call, or text, nothing. Well, of course not. Of course not. You think these people want to acknowledge her? They want to bury her. They want to hide her away. They want to keep her as far away from the cameras as possible. They want nothing to do with her. They, in fact, what was it? The president of Brazil made a commentary that he thinks that there's an AIDS connection to the vaccine, and then ironically, YouTube and social media, you know, pulled his speech because they said they have a policy against vaccine misinformation. And I thought, well, if that were the case, they would have shut down their entire operation. If they really had a policy against vaccine misinformation, there wouldn't be, you know, a Google, a Facebook, or any of these other things, because all they do is vaccine misinformation. That's they think of that as their job. And either because they're making money at it, or they got some crusade, or they want to kill a large percentage of the population, or they have some misplaced delusion of doing good, you know, then I don't know, or maybe all of the above. I don't know. Gene, what motivates people to be this corrupt, this callous, this heartless, this soulless? You know, it's got to be more than just money. I understand that if it's just money, but I still think there's more to it. There's something deeply wrong with
people.
Well,
I think it's a
lot
of different things. I mean, okay. Money's for some people, money greed is huge. Another thing, right. It's being able to feel powerful. You know, I think once you start getting that, those, you know, getting experiences with that, you just want more and more and more. I mean, in Biden's case, you look back to when he started, he was as nasty, if not, well, I can't say if not worse. He was as nasty back then. I mean, the stuff that he did and said about blacks, or non-white people, and you know his that he had to drop out of the one presidential race because he plagiarized, lied.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's who he wanted running this country. Oh yeah. So I think they get a little taste of it, and they just want more and more and more. You know, I never did have the conversation about his wife, and it was, you know, you talk about conspiracy theories. Uh-huh. And this I never had heard about, but they said that, you know, there's talk that Biden met Jill after his wife died. Uh-uh, that's not true. And there was, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but it was interesting that one article said that, you know, that his wife found out they were having an affair and she was drunk and she got in that accident. Who knows what was the truth? Because you know what? The police can be paid off.
Mm-hmm.
So who's to say what really happened? No one knows except him, possibly. Well, him and his wife. Well, maybe Jill. But it's like, you know, and then he melts. And it's tragic. you know, whenever you lose anybody, I know it's tragic and I don't want to say anything bad except for the fact that he milked it for all it's worth. I'm sorry, but he did and he continues to do so. When he meets these soldiers where he killed their, literally killed their son's daughters by his incompetence, he goes, oh, but my son, yada, yada, yada. You know what? It was horrible. Your daughter and wife dying was horrible, but don't go there. You know, you don't have a clue what they're feeling because everything you've ever done was illegal and for nasty reasons. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, tell me what you think of the very absent non-first lady, doctor of education, not medicine, Jill Biden. She reminds me of a mafia wife who her husband is a murderous, you know, illegally operating, you know, person like the lowest of the low. Their family business is corruption, gambling, prostitution, drugs, things like that. And she's completely tolerant. The mafia wife who's
She likes the lifestyle. She likes the power he's got because he's got power. She's got power. But you know, I wish they would both stay in the basement because you talk about a classy lady. We've had so many classy first ladies. She's trashy first lady. You look at her clothes sometimes, and it's like, Jill, you are not 20 years old. You're not 15 years old. Why are you dressing like this? You know, people are looking up to you, and it's like, and they trashed Melania every chance they got. But yet, Jill's been put on how many magazine covers so far? She can stay in the basement too. She's done nothing. Mm-hmm. A positive, nothing positive.
Well, how much power do you think she has? Do you think, you know, is she the sort of de facto chief of staff? Does she manage him to manage her power? I mean, what's her role in all this?
I think she was, put it this way. I think she connected with him initially because she saw power way back when. If you look at some of this stuff, and I know it's only what you read, so you don't really know the truth, but it's just how everything unfolded when they met, and everything back then. I think she's the big reason, or she saw him years ago as moving up the political ladder. Why?
Kind of like Hillary
because
and Bill.
All this attention, look at me. And then as... you know, the years went on. She pushed it. And now, I mean, who in their right mind would have someone, how he is doing, and you could say this is all a fake thing. Some of the stuff he says and what he does, it's like you can't even act like that. That has to be pretty darn pure. And so, I think a lot of it has to do with her ego, whatever it is, her wanting to be front and center. I don't know, but it's just very sad.
She reminds me a lot of Hillary Clinton without the 64, you know, deaths kind of, you know, linked, not completely, but certainly people are questioning, you know, whether, you know, all the mysterious people have died. I don't know if anybody has mysteriously died around Jill Biden, but a whole lot of people have mysteriously died around Hillary Clinton that were associated with her. We're going to testify against her. We're going to do all kinds of different things. And all of a sudden they had an accident or a suicide. What a surprise. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, at one or two is a coincidence. 64 is an epidemic.
Exactly. So true.
At some point it ceases being a conspiracy theory and starts being something that this should have been looked into decades ago. And so Jill Biden, you know, she's up in that same. And to me, it's anti-feminist. You know, you're talking about women that are basically, you know, grabbing some guy to get the power that they want because they can't get it on their own.
Right.
Because
exactly.
Uniquely unpopular, you know, and does that say for feminists?
Right. Well, yeah. Well, what does it say for feminists when they pick and choose who they're going to fight for, meaning that person's life matters, you know, and, and this person doesn't when they're raped, they're this, they're that, they're from a guy, or could be vice versa. But also you got to wonder, you know, just what everything Biden's done throughout his years, she knows exactly what he's done. And I know sometimes love is blind, but it's pretty obvious the things he's done, because if we know that he's done them, she sure as heck knows that he's done them plus more. And I'm like, how can you... A person with good integrity, good morals, how can you stand by someone that's like he is. And you could say, well, she believes in marriage. No, she doesn't, because she's divorced. So you can't tell me that she believes in marriage. No.
Oh.
And you could say, well, you have to turn a blind eye. You turn a blind eye on all the stuff he's doing. I mean, what he is doing to this country. Like over the weekend, I was listening to the little talk show. And someone contacted him, and a person was over from Florida, was over in another country. They're adopting two children. The one is 12, or going to be 12. He can't come into this country until he's vaccinated. But they're lying, all these illegals. They're still bringing people from Afghanistanis, whoever, wherever, here to this country. No vaccine passport, no vaccine, no check for COVID. So why are these people that are being adopted needing to be vaccinated?
Yeah.
Why? So now they, who knows if they're even going to get into this country. I mean, I pray that they will. But it's horrible, horrible what this country is doing. Not this country, this president and his administration. And, you know, everybody everybody Biden has in his administration. I don't even know how to call it administration. I don't know.
Insurrection.
Whatever.
I always call it the insurrection. I put it right in the article.
They're all incompetent.
And, you know, yeah.
Who's more incompetent than the other?
No, I don't think so. These are ideologues.
Yeah.
Well, they're all incompetent in the same way. How do you explain the fact that they're all incompetent in the same direction? They're all incompetent about hating America. They're all incompetent about bringing in every illegal they can. They're incompetent about the fact that they're a disease that affects, 0.03% of the population seriously. They're making everybody get a mandatory genetically altering lifetime dangerous shot for. That's not incompetence. That's a conspiracy.
What I'm saying, what I'm saying is incompetent is every person in their role.
Yeah.
What are the qualifications?
Loyalty?
Ideology? Yeah, because it's sure not the best of the best.
Yeah. How do you make your bones, like as the mafia would say? How do they make their bones? How do you prove your loyalty? Because I know from my experience with liberal organizations back in my impetuous youth that you do have to prove your loyalty. You have to sacrifice for the cause. You have to prove that you're good enough to be a leftist. Well, I see even worse now. This is just to be a liberal. But to be a Marxist, you've really got to prove every single day that you've swallowed the Kool-Aid, that you've bought into everything. And the minute you stray from the party line even a little bit. I mean, they hate conservatives, independents, patriots, Christians, Jews, pick a religion. You know, they hate anybody that thinks for themselves and believes in a higher power. But they reserve particular contempt for folks that used to be them. And I'll tell you a couple of good examples. Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard was pretty much ostracized the minute she questioned anything. She questioned, Kamala Harris, the party girl, sleeping her way to the vice presidency. You know, she questioned her. And where's Tulsi Gabbard now? She's out of office. You don't hear about her much anymore. She's not getting coverage. Why? Because she tells the truth. I'll tell you a person that's going to be demonized, Joe Manchin, who's thinking of leaving the Democrat Party. If he goes, he's the one person standing in the way of $5 trillion of economic suicide. Okay. And so if he becomes a Republican, he says, it'll make my life easier. So I think he's going to do it. Probably this week, at least I hope so. But that would immediately change the balance in the Senate, and all the committees would immediately go Republican. If he changes to the Republican Party, that's 51-49. That way that, Kamala Harris won't be needed for a tie because there won't be one unless a Republican defects. When the Republicans hold the majority, if he does that, and if he does, probably Christian Sinema will do it also. That'll make it 52-48. Okay. And so all the committee chairs immediately become Republican. All the Republican bills, such as they are from the geldings, will immediately be able to be brought to the floor instead of being suppressed. Now, they should have had co-chairs anyway, because it was 50-50. And the fact that the tiebreaker is only done when there's legislation. So Kamala Harris is not part of the Senate. So the Senate itself is 50-50 right now, if you count the two, independents as Democrats, which you shouldn't do that either. All right. But the fact that they didn't have co-chairs is a fault of Mitch McConnell, who should have screamed and yelled and done everything he could. So we're not going to meet until we have co-chairs. This is a 50-50 Senate. He could have done that, but he didn't. Why? Because he's a gelding. Besides, he has no chin. I don't trust a man with no chin. I don't. Sorry. call it trivial, but the man has no character. And it all goes to the same thing. And so you've got a situation where if Christian Sinema and Joe Manchin switch parties. Well, I haven't heard anything from Senator Sinema, but Manchin's thinking of it. He alone would cause a complete shift. you know, and then watch what happens. Then see how many senators don't want to be there anymore because, well, what's the point? You know, if you can't be the majority in play, you know, why be here? So it would be fascinating. So that would, you know, but he's going to get demonized. He will be demonized in the press. Everything that he's ever done will be out there.
You know
they'll make
he
a,
will.
There'll be a bogus sex scandal. There'll be some underage or some, you know,
yes,
person,
something in his past.
Something.
Yeah.
If they can't find it, they'll make it up. Yeah.
The people from West Virginia are wiser mm-hmm. than that. They're wiser than the competent, incompetent, corrupt people in government
him.
Right now.
I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about the liberal press that are literally make stuff up about Joe Manchin. He will
he's a good Democrat.
Yeah. What's that?
I mean, look at all the crap they've made up of other Republicans. Look what's been said of all Democrats and how quickly the Democrats just push it under the rug.
Well, they don't care.
Not at all.
You know, the things said about like Anthony Weiner were real. You know, he I don't know whether he got jail or probation or something like that, but what's his name? Harvey Weinstein, the Hollywood producer accused of rape. You know, those were real charges. And I think I'm not sure what the record is. I know he's convicted of something. I don't know if he's serving time or probation or whatever it is. You know, but then as opposed to like the Jim Jordan scandal, which was false, that Donald Trump, all the women that accused Trump of sexual whatever disappeared after the election. Even our own Matt Gaetz had an alleged sex scandal, underage, you know, it's the usual stuff. It's just like part of being a Republican is to go through a Democrat, you know, made up sex scandal. Kavanaugh, you know, Blasey Ford. Oh, no, he shouldn't be on the Supreme Court. Well, I'll tell you who shouldn't have been on the Supreme Court is Merrick Garland. Think about that. Can you imagine if the man that thinks it's okay to declare parents terrorists, you know, for speaking up at a school board meeting because they're challenging the government, what Clinton used to call anti-government. It was a crime to be anti-government in the Clinton administration. That's why he went after the militia groups and everybody else who were arming themselves against a possible, you know, Waco in their community. I mean, the danger was very real that could have happened anywhere. So there's very logical reasons for people arming and getting together because the government had already wiped out, burned, assassinated, and bulldozed the evidence away in the community of Waco, the Branch Davidians. And if the government can do that to them, they can do it to anybody. You know, so they're very good reasons to be quote anti-government. You know, but to them that's the greatest sin. So it's like counter-revolutionary in a communist country where they just shoot you. Same kind of thing, proving your loyalty. So what's important to these people is loyalty to a leftist ideology. They don't give a damn about America, constitutional rights, or anything like that. That's how they operate. So knowing that is what we have to do. We have to do something about it. Okay, I got this article on China.
I want to say something
before 7 o'clock. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Just something quick. What you were talking about Fauci before and everything. Was that yesterday or recently that Congressman Cawthorn from North Carolina asked for an investigation? For Fauci and all things that were going on about COVID and stuff like that, and that's
nice.
Not COVID but gain of function. I was like, yay.
But what's going to happen with it though? Because the Congress is still in the hands of Democrats when it shouldn't be. I still believe the election of 2020 was fraudulent. There's no reason for the House to be Democrat either. You can't prove to me that those votes were legal, especially when they changed the votes. Republicans who had won, it was in the midterms in 2018, several Republicans won in California and they mysteriously had their votes changed after votes mysteriously showed up, you know, after they stopped counting, you know, the next day, all these new votes came in. Whoops, sorry, these are Democrats now. You know, those are stolen votes. Those are stolen seats and they stole enough. There's only 5 votes difference in the House between the Republicans and the Democrats. You know, so you can't tell me that, you know, probably 10 to 20 of those weren't fraudulently, you know, cheated on to get them into the House to change the numbers. But the geldings don't do anything about it. So you can call for all the special investigations you want. In a Democrat administration, they're not going to go anywhere. That's
but you know what? The thing is, it started this year. And even if it doesn't go anywhere this year, who's to say next year when the Republicans take over things, that things can't be checked?
Well, what's
you
who's
know,
to say
then it's already in
things?
The make.
What? Why do you think the Republicans are going to take over, given the fact that we have an administration that's fraudulent, that was taken over by a coup, that the GOP, you know, the gelding old party, has not challenged anywhere, you know, like the states have. I mean, the state GOPs are doing it, state legislatures. But why do you think that, you know, the Democrats are going to cheat any less this time? They stole a presidency. They stole Senate seats. They stole House seats. What makes you think they're going to be any different? Oh, yeah, a few laws have changed. But what makes you think they're not going to cheat in 2022 and steal everything all over again? Why not?
I don't know that. And it's probably a high likelihood they will. However, okay. I gotta believe that it's just like how much Trump won in the first election, that's going to happen with Republicans this time around. If so many people vote for them, that there's no way that the people, the corrupt people that are working with the votes can sway that many, you know, votes in the opposite direction.
Well, they're not swaying votes. They're making them up.
Well, but also too, no, but there was a lot, I think, too, switched and stuff like that. But also, mm-hmm. I think if any voting place goes down for any reason while the vote count is going on, mm-hmm. The rest of those votes cannot be counted. And I know that's not going to happen either, but
yeah,
wishful thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Let's play something real quick. I can get to an article on China.
Jack, just, you know, too, on chat, and I'm so over it, because all he's saying is that, wait, why? There's no proof that Bill or Jill Biden – or not Jill, I forget his first wife, his pretty name, but I can't remember it right offhand.
Yeah, that I don't know.
There's no proof she wasn't drunk. Well, there was no proof she was. There wasn't? Who knows? Or that there's no proof that she was drunk.
Did they do a toxicology?
Because I said, were you there? Unless you were there, you can't. With Biden and all his corruptness, who's to say he couldn't sway someone? And, you know, we all know anybody's above corruption, especially those people in, you know, some people, you get someone in law enforcement, not everybody. I had some fabulous policemen in those people, but not everybody is. And Biden seems to pick all the people that lack scruples.
Well, sure, because he's got his cabal. Anyway, we'll be right back here with another article.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
Yeah, it's funny. We expanded the show to 3 hours, and I'm already, you know, looking for more time to try and cover the things that I want to cover. But Jean's right on in her analysis of, you know, certainly these problems, these people, these folks here. So I found an article in the Gatestone Institute. It's another one of my go-to sources, trying to get away from just the basic news stories and get much more into the analysis. And they're an international policy council. And Lawrence Kadish wrote this article on October 25th called "Why is America Financing the Chinese War Machine?" So remember the show yesterday where I said, we have met the enemy and he is us. That's the quote from Pogo. And then I talked about earlier, you know, and early in the week, and I did a whole thing on China from Sun Tzu, you know, all the way through what's happening in China now, their philosopher who's, you know, sort of telling Xi Jinping, you know, about us and how, you know, he wrote a book, America Defeating America. And so this is, it's sort of a theme I'm kind of pursuing this week. Anyway, this article, fascinating. This is, starts off, how did the Chinese come to possess such prowess, you know, from us? It says, the Chinese know that a democracy whose economy is weakened by COVID of a curious origin, a multi-trillion dollar budget that would plunge us into historic debt, a nation staggering under the burden of a possibly enfeebled national leadership, and a military humbled by being ordered off the Afghan battlefield by its commander-in-chief, what I call a surrender, may be a once great country that has lost its way. He says, Washington, these are the bullet points, and I'll get to more of this stuff in a little bit. He says, Washington needs to pivot and provide appropriate and necessary incentives for businesses to expand our once formidable manufacturing base here in the United States. America has the means, skills, and resources to return to its role as a super exporter. And all those ships that are off Los Angeles, yeah, they'd be going the other way, right? But to do so will also require us to get our economic house in order and freeze our nation's debt ceiling. So I'm glad somebody else is saying it. An economy that stands on the brink of a multi-trillion dollar self-induced debt makes us vulnerable to a fiscal collapse. Financial discipline will be required if we actually wish to stop our financing of the Chinese war machine. And so then they ask the question, how did the Chinese come to possess, you know, such prowess? So simple, from us. We became a primary customer for their goods that range from children's toys and housewares to medicines. Yeah, tell me about that. And embedded smartphone technology. We welcome the trade in a manner that future historians will find as inexplicable just as we do now when looking back at the companies such as IBM and Ford, who did a thriving business with the Nazis on the eve of World War II. After all, it wasn't about anyone's repugnant ideology. It was just business. As businessmen say today, if America keeps allowing it, they will keep doing it. Except that today, we are doing business with a country far richer and far more aggressive than America's former adversaries. It goes on. As consumers of Chinese-made goods and investors in Chinese-made products, we are openly funding the Chinese military. China's leadership has made no secret of its plans to rule the U.S. technologically, economically, and militarily, if necessary, by, quote, unrestricted warfare, okay? So China's at war, and as we talked about earlier in the week, China's at war with us, okay? Make no mistake about it, business is war. You know, remember the saying from the Michael Crichton book, Rising Sun? Watch the movie. It's really cool. You know, Wesley Snipes, you know, Sean Connery. But anyway, unrestricted warfare means fighting on every possible front, ideological, sociological, cultural, financial, economic, you know, industrial, transportation, energy, all that stuff is warfare to the Chinese, especially stealing intellectual property and doing everything and influencing elections. You know, China has a big part in installing their ambassador to the United States, you know, President Nobody. The article says, for an America indifferent to the strategic implications, we placed trillions, that's with a T, folks, trillions of dollars into the Chinese economy while seriously eroding our own industrial base. He says, now much of what we depend upon is sitting in massive container ships, sitting idle off America's West Coast, stuck in a logistics logjam that has taught our citizens the word, quote, supply chain, along with what happens when you dismantle your domestic production capacity and export it to a hostile nation. Rather than the goods, this is like OPEC, you know, when we were dependent on foreign oil, we never had to be dependent on foreign oil, and Trump proved that by making us energy independent, okay? Notice that we're energy dependent again, because that's what the globalists want. They want us dependent, disempowered, our economy to crumble, and they basically bought and paid for the people to do it, and they're now sitting illegally in the seat of government. The article says, rather than the goods from China unable to land, the U.S. should be the exporter, not the importer. There should be no goods from China waiting to land, no revenues from America flowing into the coffers of the Chinese Communist Party. The Chinese know their history. They know that a democracy whose economy is weakened by COVID of a curious origin, and this is what they talked about in the summary above, a multi-trillion-dollar budget that would plunge us into historic debt, it's worth reading again. A nation staggering under the burden of possibly enfeebled national leadership. What do you mean possibly? And a military humbled by being ordered off the Afghan battlefield by its commander-in-chief may be a once great country that has lost its way. It's a fascinating article. The Chinese know how to use strength, spot weaknesses, and assert their potent and growing dominance at the expense of others. They view the last century as a period of humiliation. From their actions and ours, they intend to make this era a century of humiliation for some other nation. Yeah, that'll be us. Their current and growing economic and military power can be easily stamped, financed by American business. It is not enough to wring our hands in the face of such relentless adversary. Washington needs to pivot and provide appropriate and necessary incentives for business to expand our once formidable manufacturing base. That was in the article above in the bullet points. Okay. So the question, and you know, ask Gene and everybody here, if you want to call in, 215-383-3832, the question now is whether the United States, whose citizens rarely reflect on their own history of exceptionalism, has the strength, commitment, and courage to write a different ending to a chapter of history currently being written by the People's Republic of China. Gene? We have seen the enemy, and he is us.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Yep.
Yeah. So when I used to be a tour guide in San Francisco, and I'd watch, I think I've talked about this before, the ships coming from China and Costco, Chinese Overseas Shipping Company. That's not Costco with a T, okay? Costco. The ships would come in full of containers, and they'd be low in the water. because those containers were full of stuff. They'd offload, and then they go back out to China, you know, with the ships riding very high in the water, still with containers, you know, which meant the containers were mostly empty. So there's our problem right there, and I knew this was a problem, the trade imbalance. And it was perfectly fine. We've got a problem. I've talked about this in this country before, that we have a problem with short-term quarterly profits. In other words, if you can make a quick sale to China, then your quarterly profits look better, and your market looks better, your stock looks better, your investors are happy, and everybody's happy. The problem is the Chinese are thinking 100 years from now. So when they invest in a business, they're not thinking about a quarterly profit. They're thinking about taking that business. You know, when they invest in a harbor, it's so they can send their ships there, and they can charge everybody else ridiculous amounts for going there. You know, when they buy investment property, you know, that's for the Communist Party. So they have all the benefits of money from a normally free market economy with all the power of a dictatorship. It's a very interesting combination that's going on right now. And the fact that American business is so, I guess, not disloyal, I'm trying to think of what they are, so contemptuous of our own country, that it's just business, that they somehow rationalize. It's like the mafia hitman that goes and gets communion on Sunday, you know, and gets, you know, goes to confession, you know, bless the Lord for I have sinned. I killed 5 people last week and I'm sorry, really. Okay, you know, go forth and don't sin again. Well, maybe, you know, I'll see you next week. You know, it's the kind of thing they do there. It's like people that, you know, work, you know, 9 to 5 as a torturer and then go home to their family for dinner. You know, these people divorce themselves from what they're doing and they say, it's just business. That's like saying, I'm just following orders. I mean, it's kind of the same mentality of the Nazis and the Nuremberg trials that did atrocious things to people, absolute atrocities, you know, and then they said, well, it's not my fault. I was following orders. I was doing what I was told. Well, yeah, it is your fault. You know, the business says, well, I'm just, you know, it's a quarterly profits. I have to make money. That's my job. At the expense of your nation, you know, where does your loyalty to your corporation and your loyalty to your country, which is more important? One would think loyalty to your country, you know, and your fellow citizens, but apparently not. You know, I've got a more extensive article on this, but I don't have time to read it. But it's a crazy thing. And that's what's going on. All right. Let me see. We've got about 8 minutes now. So what I'm going to do. Jeannie, you want to comment on that? Then we'll play our Santa Rosa piece because you never know when we're going to get another chance before Dave.
You can go ahead and play it. That's fine. Yeah.
I'm actually editing it. I've got because I think this one's a little bit long, and I've got I made a mistake. I mispronounced the word chimera. It came out chimera as I'm reading through and trying to do this stuff. So that's my mistake, but I'm going to fix that. Anyway, let me play this for you now. And we'll come back, and David Jones should be with us in a little bit from Santa Rosa Volunteers. We have lots to catch up on because he wasn't able to make it last week. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. This is part two of perhaps the most brilliant piece of founders' writing after the Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson and The Crisis by Thomas Paine. And for this one, I have no idea who wrote it. I'm going to jump around a bit to get you caught up with Federalist Papers number 6 and the folly of the arguments of Publius, a.k.a. John Jay, and his preposterous assumption that the Constitution has to be ratified or the estates under the Articles of Confederation will break into 3 or 4 separate confederacies and the Union will be lost. The fact that no such evidence or circumstance for this exists is irrelevant to the elitists pushing the Constitution for their own personal gain and power. Pretty much what goes on today. So here is what Sentinel, pen name of the author of Anti-Federalist No. 6, said about John Jay's arguments. This hobgoblin appears to have sprung from the deranged brain of Publius, a New York writer who, mistaking sound for argument, has with Herculean labor accumulated myriads of unmeaning sentences and mechanically endeavored to force conviction by a torrent of misplaced words. He might have spared his readers the fatigue of wading through his long-winded disquisitions
on the direful effects of the contentions of inimical states as totally inapplicable to the subject he was professedly treating. This writer has devoted much time and wasted more paper in combating chimeras of his own creation. That's how you insult someone, founder style. When it comes to explaining the reasons behind John Jay's arguments that the United States will descend into despotism and fracture, all from no evidence, logic, or reason for such events to suddenly take place if the Articles of Confederation remain in force, even though no such action or suggestion of such action had taken place under the Articles so far. Sentinel then says this: "The source of the apprehensions of this so much dreaded anarchy would upon investigation be found to arise from the artful suggestions of designing men, and not from a rational probability grounded on the actual state of affairs. The least reflection is sufficient to detect the fallacy to show that there is no one circumstance to justify the prediction of such an event. On the contrary, a short time will evince to the utter dismay and confusion of the conspirators that a perseverance in cramming down their scheme of power upon the freemen of this state, Pennsylvania, will inevitably produce an anarchy destructive of their darling domination, and may kindle a flame prejudicial to their safety. They should be cautious not to trespass too far on the forbearance of freemen when resting their dearest concerns, but prudently retreat from the gathering storm." The whole point to me of John Jay using false arguments for the Constitution are to generate fear, because people with fear can be led to places they would never go otherwise. Take a look at the entire response to COVID from government. Every bit of it is based on fear, on preposterous arguments of hiding and suppressing evidence of relief, and of making people do things they would never do using their own judgment and choice. Just like when considering the Constitution at our founding, fear is used to abandon completely the Articles of Confederation, where only minor amendments might have sufficed. Sentinel then says this: "The other specter that has been raised to terrify and alarm the people out of their exercise of their judgment on this great occasion is the dread of our splitting into separate confederacies or republics that might become rival powers and consequently liable to mutual wars from the usual motives of contention. This is an event still more improbable than the foregoing. It is a presumption unwarranted either by the situation of affairs or the sentiments of the people. No disposition leading to it exists. The advocates of the new Constitution seem to view such a separation with horror, and its opponents are strenuously contending for a confederation that shall embrace all America under its comprehensive and salutary protection." Sentinel continues by considering John Jay's arguments of the necessity of the Constitution or else. "I will admit that the necessary consequence of rejecting or delaying the establishment of the new Constitution would be the dissolution of the Union and the institution of even rival and inimical republics. Yet ought such an apprehension, if well-founded, to drive us into the fangs of despotism? Infinitely preferable would be the occasional wars to such an event. The former, although a severe scourge, is transient in its continuance, and in its operations partial, but a small proportion of the community are exposed to its greatest horrors, and yet fewer experience its greatest evils. The latter is permanent and universal misery, without remission or exception. As passing clouds obscure for a time the specter of the sun, so do wars interrupt the welfare of mankind. But despotism is a settled gloom that totally extinguishes happiness. Not a ray of comfort can penetrate to cheer the dejected mind. The goad of power with unabating rigor insists upon the utmost exaction. Like a merciless taskmaster, it is continually inflicting the lash, and is never satiated with the feast of unfeeling domination or the most abject servility. My comment is that this brilliant expose of the fraud of the Federalist is the perfect precursor to the fraud of the deep state today. And as they try to resurrect the globalist cabal in control, which Trump actually challenged successfully, and they try to reduce our country to an everlasting gloom of work, taxes, and death, people all over the country are learning, just as the country did in the 1700s, that doom and gloom is not inevitable, and that a powerful, dominating elite is not in control because they say they are, and that nothing is preordained to get us there or keep us there. However, then as now, all that is necessary for powerful elites to run everything, gather all the power to themselves, and to let them accumulate all the wealth and property for themselves is to believe their lies, do nothing, and then complain every step on the way down to tyranny that somebody should do something. Well, that somebody is you. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. All right, back again here. Let me just, I've been sort of playing on the articles for a little bit here. There's so much to talk about, but Dave's here right now too. So let me see if we can what do I want to play now. Let's wake y'all up and we'll be right back.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
All right, so we're back. Let me make Dave's line live. We'll find out what's going on with Santa Rosa Volunteers. I just played our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece on part two of the Anti-Federalist number 6. Good morning, sir. How you doing? What's happening in the world? What you working on?
Oh, boy, we got a lot going on. I appreciate it, Greg. How are you?
Isn't it great? I love being an activist. It's so much fun, all the things we can do.
It is. It is utter madness, but hopefully we are making some positive movement forward in our quest to liberate Santa Rosa County.
We should tell folks where we are for because we have new listeners all the time. Here in the Panhandle of Florida, if you're coming in Florida from the left, you know, from the west, the first county you run into is after you leave Alabama. The next one is Santa Rosa, and that's where we are. So we're the, and both Dave and my goal, and we've talked about this, you know, fairly extensively, is to make Santa Rosa County a model for the country, to make us the freest, least regulated, most American, you know, best place to live with the greatest laws that you can use in your county and your city and your state to use as models. And that's one of the big things we'll be working on. And it's just really cool to have Dave working with me on this, and I'm working with him. And we just it's like, you know, whenever you have someone, you know, that agrees that, and you start doing kind of work like this, being an advocate. I mean, I do mean this. Being an advocate is fun. It's just a tremendous, you know, pleasure to be able to do things. And when you see the accomplishments, you go, wow. That's kind of cool. One person can make a difference. And as I said in my Facebook tweet the other day, you know, when someone says, well, I'm only one person, what can I do? And of course, my answer now is, well, all of us are only one person. What can you do? And so Dave proves what he can do, and I prove what I can do, and Jean proves what she can do, and everybody else on the show. You know, that's how we do things here. So like I said, we didn't get a chance to chat last week, but let's see if we can get caught up on everything from our illegal alien bill, you know, if that's got any movement, to whatever else is happening that you're working on. Meetings coming up, things like that.
Yeah. We're trying to gain some traction with the illegal alien bill. I was actually in Tallahassee Saturday.
Oh, how was
that?
I
got the opportunity to put that in front of Luis Miguel, which is a candidate for that's running against Marco Rubio. He's looking to go to D.C. for that Senate seat. So. He is, excuse me, he's definitely a much better candidate. He's putting on rallies and things like that to to fight the vaccine mandates and the mask mandates. So he is a truly constitutional individual, at least right now. I've talked to him about what happens well, when he goes to D.C. and try to make sure that he doesn't get corrupted.
Like Marco Rubio, you know, we thought Marco Rubio was you know, our patriot answer, you know, to a whole bunch of things. And then, of course, he was great, you know, when he used to speak to Mark Levin. I used to listen to him in San Francisco. That this guy's great. He's a patriot. He's, you know, his parents are Cuban. You know, he knows tyranny. And then, of course, he becomes part of the establishment. It's like, you know, you're seduced by the dark side. He's lost the force he has. Not anymore. Will he be Jedi? Anyway, sorry, I digress. But yeah, and we hope the same thing. I'm curious, what kind of insights did you gain talking to Luis Miguel, and what did he say about our bill? I'm really curious right now because I want to have him on the show. So, yeah.
I really think that he would come on the show. I talked to him about campaigning more in this area. He does have a campaign manager up here that I know really well. We've worked on a couple of different events together. Okay. So I need him to campaign more up in this area. Marco Rubio has had multiple reps trying to regain the trust of the Panhandle, which is a futile effort, I believe. But we need to support Luis Miguel. Right now the numbers look great. But I've got gave him a copy of our illegal alien free zone. He thought it was great. Of course, you know, he's running for a seat in D.C., so the things he's looking at is much different than you know, we wrote that for a local level. But
it's local and it's national. It's local. It has a local effect in San Luis County, but it's national in that if counties all over the country adopt it, now it's a national bill. And this could be national news. I think it's going to be just as our mask mandate defeat in our city council became national news. I think that if this bill – you know, when we can get this through the county commission, it will be national news because other counties are going to go, huh, that's kind of cool. Never thought of that, you know. So the fact that you know the campaign manager of Luis Miguel is critical because what you can do is talk to – I'm happy to have the campaign manager on in this area. You know, and then we can get Luis Miguel. But the thing to do is to talk about the bills. If he's, you know, running for the Senate, especially having not been in the House as far as I can – was he ever in the House or was he –
He's green as a blade of grass, brand new.
Okay, and that's not a problem because we know it worked with Trump. But so this gives us a tremendous chance, like I'm trying to do with Anthony Sabatini, for example, who's running for Congress. You know, I've tried to, and I've been in contact with him, but not as much as I'd like. But I'd love to be able to get these folks some of the national issues. So we can talk about our bill here at the local level, but there are national bills that I would love to talk to Luis Miguel, and we can start with this campaign person, or you can talk to them, or we can meet with them, especially if we're in this area. But we have bills that would be immensely popular with both Democrats and Republicans because most of our stuff's nonpartisan. You know, you look at the bill to eliminate the withholding tax, you know, during the time you're earning your standard deduction. So you get your money this year instead of waiting for your, quote, refund next year. That puts money into the economy immediately. It's good for Democrats because it helps working families. It's good for Republicans because it's a tax cut and a tax, you know, it's an elimination of withholding. Now, I'm going to tell you right now that the powers that be are going to go apoplectic over that bill because they know as well as I know that the reason I wrote that is to get rid of all withholding taxes. Okay, you start with this and you watch. They're going to scream and yell and kick and fuss. It's going to destroy the government. We won't be able to meet our obligations. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's such a simple bill that people go, well, yeah, why can't I have my money this year? You know, I mean, and there's more of those too. There's more of those in my package. In fact, you should get them. I'll send it to you. We have our package of 23 bills to rock the nation in 2022. It was 22 bills, but, you know, I keep adding. The last one I added was our illegal alien bill. But we've got bills at the local level, we've got bills at the state level, and we've got bills, a lot of bills at the national level that he can run on. You know, and I would tell them, I said, look, you guys can be the first campaign in American history to run on legislation run by, you know, written by regular people. That in itself is a campaign issue. So if you like this person, if you think they're going to be a decent person, that their convictions are real, then let's see what we can do to influence them, bring them on board, bring them on the show, and give them the option to run with citizen-written legislation. I think that would be incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. Sounds like a good idea. I'll work on that this week and see if I can't get him on board. like I said, he has to have the support of this area, and I know this area looking for a new candidate. They're done with Rubio. They're done with Scott, and pretty much everybody else that's an established
Gates
candidate. Gates. You should have seen what happened to Senator Broxson and Broxson, Andrade, and Jair last night.
I want to hear more about the rally in Tallahassee too. But let's go. We can segue back and forth. So this is an important meeting. What was going on there?
So this was basically their town hall. So we had Doug Broxson. I don't remember Andrade's first name, and Jair Williamson. So all three of them were there to hear from the citizens. It was basically standing room only. The stadium, the auditorium was full, and everybody got the speakers that signed up early got 3 minutes to speak, and then the ones that signed up last night at last minute got 1 minute. And they heard from the majority of the crowd, probably 99%. I think there was one lady there that was speaking for abortion, which was ridiculous. But they heard that they are required to vote down or vote in favor of removing the vaccine mandates in the special session. They were told repeatedly over and over again they needed to stand with the governor and get rid of these vaccine mandates in any form, private sector, public, however they exist. They don't need to. I also gave them a lot of information on the way the school board's been working and the weaponization of the sheriff's office against the school parents. And the potential that we have now for the FBI to be brought in and involved in our school board meetings. So they heard
Did you get a chance? Have you talked to the sheriff's office, or is there were sheriff's representatives there, or anything like that about this? I mean, I can't. From what I know about Sheriff Johnson, I think he's running again. And just to let folks know too, nationally, the sheriffs, you know, our constitutional officers have a tremendous amount of power to uphold the Constitution above and beyond what the Biden insurrection, President Nobody, you know, are trying to impose on us through the FBI, which has no constitutional basis at all. But they certainly can't come into our state and start arresting parents for this imagined, you know, domestic terrorism for parents that simply want to tell school boards, you know, who are the boss of the school boards, you know, what to teach the kids. You know, we are consumers of a service. They're not, you know, they're not the government babysitting service. You know, they're not there to raise the kids. We are. And so any input from the sheriff's office or anybody talking about that?
No, the sheriff wasn't present as usual. He stays hidden from the public eye. There were a couple of deputies there that were, you know, there just to protect the meeting or whatever, which they had a rough night towards the end.
Anybody get arrested?
No. Nobody got arrested. It got to a point where the crowd was wanting answers from Doug Broxson specifically.
He's the state senator, for folks that don't know.
Right.
State senator and state representatives, the other two. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So he's voted in the affirmative on a lot of gun red flag legislation that is limited. And one of the local business owners, owner of a gun store, was questioning and informing both the crowd and the representatives that there are background checks that are held indefinitely by the state of Florida. So we call ourselves a free state of Florida, but we're denying people's background checks for no reason. We're just setting them on a desk and letting them sit there for 6 and 8 months.
Wow.
It's not that there's a problem. It's not that there's a flag. That's that they just don't want to process it. Just we randomly pull ones and we're refuse, which actually happened to me at the beginning of COVID.
Wait. Is this Nikki Fried who's doing the concealed carry stuff at the Department of Agriculture, or is this who does this? Which office in Florida is just hanging on to? And these are gun purchases they're not checking? Because I think the check, the federal check is the NICS check, National whatever registry, you know, I forgot what it's called. So who's holding up in Florida?
There's a double two-part process. The BATFE has a department that runs the background check, but there's also a state of Florida department that is involved in that process. And the department with the state of Florida, and it's not the concealed carry Department of Agriculture. Chris knows a lot more about this than I do, but they are holding these background checks, and they're not approving them. They're not denying them. They're just, we'll get to it when we get to it. We're overloaded and understaffed, which is not an acceptable answer when you're dealing with somebody's constitutionally guaranteed rights.
Well, yeah, in fact, especially for folks, you know, that they're doing prior restraint, you know, we're checking you to see what you might do in the future, maybe. That's unconstitutional on its face. You know, considering the Constitution clearly says that the right to keep and bear arms can't be touched, which includes the right to purchase, because until you purchase, you can't keep them. You know, so, and we can mention the person, I'm just going to take a guess. Was this Chris Smith of Gulf Coast Guns? I mean, if he spoke in public, I'm not going to be releasing any confidence here, but I'd like to get him on the show, actually. Yeah, is he our advocate? Yeah. Okay. So let's see if we get Chris on the show. Yeah.
And he's got all that reported. It turned into the point where Doug Broxton refused to answer or so much as comment. And he quite frankly got tired of listening to everybody and got up and ran out. Physically ran out of the
building. Isn't that special? So let's get this on the record here. So Doug Broxton, state senator from the which district? He covers Escambia and Santa Rosa, correct?
I believe it's District 2, yes.
So District 2 Senator Doug Broxton, who, if I remember, my old boss said, and I'm going to say this in public too, Mike Bates at WEBY Radio, that Doug Broxton was the one who put over the top the alleged safety act from the assassin who murdered those kids at Douglas Stoneman High School, with the excuse that, I had to do something, and that something included, taking away the constitutional rights of 18 to 21-year-olds and doing a bunch of other things in a bill that allegedly had a few good things, in other words, school safety officers and some other stuff, but also had a bunch of bad stuff in it. And his excuse was, I had to do something. And Mike's told the story several times on the air. And so Mike knows it better than I do. I'm getting it from him. But this sounds like Doug Broxton. Now, is anybody running against him? And how long is his term?
His term is up in 22, so I do not believe there's anybody pre-filed to run against him, but I do know of a lot of people that are about to. So there will be opposition to him that hasn't been finalized yet.
Okay. Now, I have an open door policy when it comes to candidates. And I've had candidates on the show frequently. In fact, one of the better folks that came on the show was Michelle Salzman, who's the state representative, from Escambia. She spent an hour on the show and challenged me on a bunch of issues. It was a really feisty discussion that we had. So she's wonderful. And I'm sure she'll be back. Hopefully I can get her back on the show before the election too. But since we're coming into an election year, this is going to be a fascinating time. So any candidates that anybody that you want to bring on or anybody, just let me know and maybe I can contact them as well, especially on Wednesdays. We might have like the second half of the hour, even extending into the third hour, which is usually open, but not today. We can have extended. I don't like debates. I don't like people yelling at each other on my show. I won't tolerate that. But I want to deal with controversial issues. So if we get the candidates on individually and they have two that want to debate on the show, I've still got my gong. I can still shut them up. Have you heard the gong yet? I don't know if you've heard this, but this is my, when people get too obnoxious, I play this. That's the return to your neutral corners, folks.
That's obnoxious in and of itself, is it not?
Well, that's the whole idea. If you get gonged, it's like, remember the gong show? Remember that when contestants were so bad that that they would get gonged and off they go. I want to have him played here for a while too. So let me get this too. So as we get to the news, let's go to the newsroom. See what's coming off the wires. And now David Jones reporting from the newsroom. So I have these fun things I can play with. I get buttons everywhere on the right side of my studio screen. But yeah, this is I really want to get him out of office. I can't remember anything. Can you think of any memorable legislative events that have come out? Has he written any decent bills? you know, Mr. Doug Broxton.
He has been lockstep with Rick Scott pretty much since the beginning. Nothing productive, just nonsensical tax increasing, same nonsense they all do. And he hides behind the veil of being conservative, and he's not, or not what my definition of conservative should be anyway. But that's exactly the legislation he was getting pressed on last night was was the legislation about the active shooter that he had to do something, but he wouldn't even say that last night. He was the look on his face was, "How dare you peasants question me?"
Interesting. Pride cometh before the fall. These people should listen to political sages. You know, you want to know what's going to happen? Read Shakespeare. Most of this has been done before. And for folks that are wondering why we're focusing on the local issue here, you all have state senators and state representatives like this in your states. You know you do. You know you have rhinos. You know you have people that are lying to you. You know you have people that talk well before they get elected and do nothing in office. And we all have that. So the question is what you do about it. So what you can do in your area, in your county, you know, with your local talk show host is help them turn into action. Radio. You can write your own legislation. This is what we do here, writeyourlaws.com. If you're in a particular county or city and there's something, you know, incredibly onerous about what's going on there, you can do something about it, like we're doing here with our bill, our illegal alien free zone bill. So we wrote it, Dave and I wrote this, and we've presented it to the county commissioners, and we're going to try everything we can to get it heard in public and passed, you know, and we'd be the first, you know, county in the country to have an illegal alien free zone. And that's something that all these folks around the country could model in your states, in your counties. And we could, actually, what I want to do when it passes our county is bring it to the state. You know, I'm bringing it up to the state level and propose it for the next. I know a lot of the legislation's already been worked on and proposed for our next legislative session, but they can always handle emergency stuff, and the governor can always propose it anytime he wants. Which leads to my next question. We should cover the other two, Alex Andrade and the other ones, but I want to know about the special legislative session that the governor is proposing for Florida to get rid of these vaccine mandates. Because my goal, I think you and I and some other folks should, you know, put our heads together, like possibly our medical freedom reporters, sit down and get ourselves our own vaccine mandate bill that we think makes sense, and put it to the listeners and take in some comments and see if we can write a bill before that legislative session and say, here's what we think of a vaccine mandate restriction bill, and see what they say to that. Because, you know, who's going to write the bill? Well, let me ask you this. Well, you can get your opinion on that, but also, who do you think is going to write the bill for the state legislative session? I mean, how much big pharma is there in Florida? How much influence do these companies have? How much do you think the federal government is going to pressure the state representatives and state senators in that legislative session to do, you know, make the weakest bill possible, or have loopholes, or have something else, some way out of it, you know, snuck in there so that it's the mandate without a mandate? Do you see that as a danger in the next legislative session?
Oh, yeah. And okay. I was actually upset that they had so much time because of that, because that's exactly what's happening right now. The governor called a special session, but he left several weeks between the time he announced it till the time the session is going to occur, which, okay, you know, I understand you got to plan and get everything in order and adjust your schedules. But if it's a special session or an emergency session, maybe it could have been done sooner. But that's exactly what's happening in this time period. All the big pharma and the special interests are all trying to grab our reps, like they do on every decision that they make. The timeline has fallen to where these town hall meetings have happened. We were in Tallahassee Saturday. The reps know exactly what the people expect of them at this point. So if they go in there and they leave a loophole, and it was made explicitly clear, no mandate in any form under any circumstances. I don't want a wiggle room or a private this or a hospital that, nothing.
No just-in-case provision, or, you know, if the Surgeon General determines that there should, you know, be a mandate, you know, first of all, if it's necessary, we're going to do it. We're going to do it anyway. If it were necessary to wear masks to prevent COVID, we would all be wearing masks to prevent COVID. it's not necessary. They don't work, and it's like a mosquito flying through a garage door. Most people know that. The people that are doing it because they don't want to be criticized by other people who are doing it. They don't want to be criticized by Karen, you know, so the Karens out there. So that's why a lot of people are doing this. You know, the lockdowns, you think lockdowns prevent COVID? Please, give me a break. Most people get it at home. So what you're doing is you're putting people in the very environment where they're going to get it, home. Because the people who have the closest genetic association, most susceptible to a virus from somebody else, is your family. That's why I always got colds from my daughter. You know, it's same DNA practically, you know. And yep. So this makes sense. So why would you put, so if you want to do something, you know, to help COVID, get people out of the house and go to the beach, especially in Florida, get on the sunshine. That's how you prevent COVID. You don't lock people in their homes and close things down and isolate people. Well, I had an article. I actually wrote an open letter to DeSantis, and I called him Dictator DeSantis. I said, you know, how can you do this? This is back in March of or March or April of 2020 when this is all getting going. So yeah, I should drag that out for you. You might find it interesting. Okay, so let's get something on this. Now, do you happen to know, I mean, we can look this up. Do you know the section in Florida law that they want to amend? And do you know where they want to put this no mandate provision? Did they talk about that at all?
I don't. I would assume it would go somewhere in 720, seeing as how that's dealing with body autonomy and individual rights and things of that nature. But I would really like to see Andrade and his team draft this and put it in place. He's the only one that I have even the faintest amount of trust in at this point.
So that's Section 20 of the Florida Code?
Yes, 720 of the Florida's Code.
Well, you mentioned body autonomy because you know that's something I've been thinking of recently is to add body autonomy as a protected class under the Civil Rights Act. And what that would do is for the first time make everybody in the country come under the protection of the Civil Rights Act because everybody has a body. And so the idea of not being able to be discriminated against and have the Civil Rights Commission actually fight for your body autonomy because that's their charge under legislation would totally change everything. It would totally take away the power of the CDC, which they don't really have, but people think they do, and that's part of the problem. But body autonomy is something we really need to talk about. You know, auto, self, you know, autonomy, the power over yourself, which is probably the you know, what the Constitution, what the Bill of Rights is certainly based on, is the rights to the individual and the power of the individual over yourself and control over yourself and the ability to not put stuff into it. Did you hear about that, what I talked about? It was in the first hour. You may have missed it. But this thing with the Vaccine Safety Foundation where this 13-year-old girl was she's basically paralyzed in a hospital right now. She was in the Pfizer drug trials. And, you know, her mother said, you'll help society get back to normal. You'll save us. You'll be a brave little girl. And, of course, now, you know, I would accuse the mother of child abuse, but that's just me. But that's all being suppressed right now. So the information that's being suppressed is unbelievable. I don't know if you heard about that, but it was earlier in the show. But this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to save people from this fate.
Right. Exactly. And I brought that up last night when I was addressing the state reps. We've been fighting this extremely hard, especially since nurses started to get fired from our local hospital, Santa Rosa
yep.
Hospital. Since the hospital has implemented their vaccine mandate, there are two individuals that were being that got the vaccine due to that mandate in that hospital that are now in the ICU because of pulmonary embolisms. This is not an abstract idea, and I told the county commissioners, and I told the city council members the day after it happened, every day that we waste, every day that you sit on your hands is another day that people are going to start getting this vaccine and they're going to start dying. And I can't get that concept through to people for whatever reason, but it's reality. These people are in ICU with pulmonary embolisms. And they're probably going to die. And if not, then we don't know what's going to happen in 2 years. The research from the original SARS mRNA virus says 2 years, you got a 60% death rate. But we'll see what happens in a few years, I guess.
That's tens of millions of people in this country. If you figure some 100 million people have one, two, or possibly three shots, and a 60% death rate, that's about 60 million people, which is a figure I've heard before. That's you know, mind-blowing to think that, like, again, as Gina and I talked about earlier, these people have no soul. Well, I want to bring Gina to the conversation in terms of, you know, what is the motivation? You know, what is behind this? I think it's the propaganda of safety. People believe two things that lead them to do this. One, that COVID will kill them, and two, that the vaccine will save them. None of that's true. It's not a vaccine. It can kill them or injure them, you know, if not now, later. And COVID, you know, has a, I don't even like to say survival rate. Its effective rate is less than 1% of doing anything serious to anybody. So the irrationality of mandating something that is both fatal and crippling against something that it doesn't stop, that natural immunity, you know, blocks 99.5% of in people anyway, is irrational, unless, of course, you throw money in. So belief system, Gene.
Well, I think there's many different things. One of them, I think, is, like you said before, people just want this country, the world, whatever, their lives to get back to normal. However, mm-hmm. by getting a vaccine, it's not going to get us back to normal. They can drink all the Kool-Aid they want. But the thing is, as we've seen, if the vaccine would help and 80% of adults, they say, are vaccinated, then COVID, the numbers should be, like, drastically low.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is, I think, people just believe what they're told. Some people still believe Biden. They still believe, and not Biden, but the government, Fauci, mm-hmm. whoever, that what they say is true. And so they say, get the vaccine. Let's get the vaccine. And then some probably look at other vaccines in the past and that they've worked to prevent disease, you know, mumps, measles, whatever. So they think, well, if that worked, this is going to do the same thing. But that's not true. So I think there's, you know, many different reasons. And, I've been having a back and forth with Bumpa Jack, and I finally figured out.
I was just taking a look at it now here. This is quite a conversation.
After you were talking about Karen, that's Karen right there.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, it's just interesting because everything we say, he disputes. But the thing is, what he don't get is that by now, it's like you believe the mainstream media? Like Fauci, you believe what he says? It's like, oh, my gosh. So anyway, I just think there's many different reasons. But I think the big thing is people just want their lives back. They want it how it was before. And unfortunately,
but you can't buy your life back.
No.
By cooperating and complying with these people. In fact, just the opposite.
Right.
You're selling your life. Now, there's something to explain, too. And I did whole shows on this. In fact, you go back about 2 or 3 months. We did a show and probably, you know, brought up in many, many shows. You know, you cannot buy your rights. You know, you can't, you know, they have no right to take them in the first place. But the idea that you can buy your rights back by complying with these mandates is insane. Governments never do that. They take that as a sign of weakness. Go ahead, Jean.
Also, people cannot put their health in someone else's hands. The thing is, you have to be the person to eat healthy if you expect to have a healthy body. And some mm-hmm. people, I know, because I just had a good friend that recently died, always ate healthy, exercised regularly, and died of cancer. She did everything right and died young.
Yeah.
So it's like it still happens. But the thing is, and my mom is a good example of this. She will run to the doctor for any little thing and think they're going to cure her. It's like, Mom, you need to take responsibility for what you do that got you into the situation. And she doesn't. She just expects to have a pill given to her. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that is just so sad.
Well, that's conditioning.
But that's how it is. But those, you know, I want to ask, too, now that so they were medical workers that are now in the ICU? Or someone... Because if that's the case, can they sue anybody? I mean, isn't that awful?
No. Everybody has immunity, and that's the problem. So I'm sure that there's going to be litigation against these private companies because the CARES Act doesn't protect them. The original CARES Act protects the vaccine manufacturers. It protects all of your local governments that mandate this, but it does not protect private business. So there's the policies of the private businesses are written to where it limits their liability, but that's going to be torn apart in court. We've already had a few landmark cases in Florida from just simple mask mandates that were already litigated and are now on the books in our favor. So,
because I would think this would be a workman's comp thing. If they had to get the vaccine for work.
Yeah.
That's a great question because that's come up before. Okay. Is this, our workers, if a company requires that they get a vaccine or mRNA shot as a condition of working, you know, is the company not responsible because they're the ones that mandated it? They held they held these folks' income and job hostage, you know, to an action that first of all was against their will in many cases. And the compliant ones have already got it, you know, and they're fine with it. You know, I don't know. Even if they suffer health consequences, hope not. But the folks that resisted it, they're doing it only because it's the only way they can see to keep their jobs, you know. And then they suffer these horrible injuries, and like I say, some people are going to be killed by this. Isn't the employer responsible? I mean, I hate to hold them after the fact because they really need to stop it beforehand. That's what my PSA is about. But in Florida, can they be held responsible? I'm not sure. David, do you know?
I'm not sure either. Like I said, I'm sure it's going to be litigated, yeah. But there's no telling what the outcome of that is at this point. And, unfortunately, all of that is after the fact and after the damage. And it's heartbreaking what I'm trying to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So basically the vaccine, you know, if it kills the person, it's like it's doing the opposite of what it's supposed to be doing.
And allegedly they're doing this, you know, for public safety, you know, and to remove their liability for having people working there who aren't, quote, vaccinated. That's irrational, too. So they're actually requiring something that's not necessary for a pandemic that ended, you know, July 4th, you know, of 2020, that was remanufactured by the government so they could sell their vaccine product. The government, you know, pharmaceutical industrial complex mafia cabal. And these people are now suffering because of it. They have to start resisting this. There are groups out there. You know, look for groups for medical freedom, okay? Most of them are private for obvious reasons, but they're out there, and you can find them, and you can find friends who will find them. I'm not going to tell them here because they're private, you know, but they're out there, and you can find support for what you're doing. So reach out. I mean, Facebook hasn't totally, you know, blocked every group out there that can help you. So get with your friends, you know, get with your fellow healthcare professionals and find out where are the groups that that people are banding together. There's Liberty Council, which specializes in refused exemptions, religious and medical. You know, that's what they do. They're a nonprofit legal organization that will help you. The resources are there. You know, it's not hard to find. I want to change subject a little bit here. This is kind of because we got Bumper Jack as our live chat person. And this I almost
you mean
laughed
Karen?
Out loud. Oh, Karen. Well,
Karen.
You know, I should.
Exactly. If you disagree, every time you disagree with him, then you're a conspiracy theorist. I want proof. You know what?
So,
being on this and people listening, you can't give people's names out. And what he sends, or she, Karen, I guess it's a she, when she sends information, it's just mainstream stuff.
Yep.
And it's all the talking points. So it's like,
well,
I'm done.
Here's where it gets fascinating, though. It says the only Bumpin' Jack is BUMPENGJACK 5. Says the only. This is in the live chat, so folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, you won't get this in the podcast, which is why we don't spend too much time on it. But you want to definitely get the show live, and you can see this. So the chat is right here on live chat. You just get a free account from Blog Talk Radio, sign up for it, and then you can participate in live chat yourself. Bumpin' Jack says the only reason I'm listening is I'm using this show as a case study for my doctorate on mental health issues and conspiracy theorists. Well, Karen, send us your doctoral thesis. I can't wait to see it. And that would be greg@writeyourlaws.com. Okay. So you want to send it? That's my public email. greg@writeyourlaws.com. Send me your thesis. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? Conspiracy
and the interesting
theorists?
Thing is it's all one-sided. You
mm-hmm,
know, so it's like anything, mm-hmm. anytime you say something she doesn't believe in, right away, you're a conspiracy theorist. It's
right.
Like, hello, but you know. I mean, the thing is,
that's
the politics, how do you know what's true and what's not? The politicians don't even know what's true and what's not, I don't think, a lot of times.
Well, they know what they're told. Go ahead, David.
It's a predetermined outcome. Your thesis is on mental illness and conspiracy theorists, and obviously you're going to see mental illness and conspiracy theorists. What my challenge would be, especially if this person is local, if you think that anything that I've said is untruthful, please come see me. You can reach me at Arise Patriots or SRV1776.com. I will take you to these people. I will show you the misery that they are in. If you think for a second these people are statistics on a spreadsheet, you're out of your mind. And if, frankly, it pisses me off that people like you sit behind your keyboard and think that you can rationalize all of this hatred and evil and death. If you think anything that I've said is dishonest or untruthful or unsubstantiated, I will show you firsthand. I'm not going to send you a picture. I want you to go to these hospital rooms, and I can get you into them, and I want you to look these people in the eye.
Well, perfect.
No way, that's well said.
But
it was
geared,
yeah.
All his nasty comments are geared towards me because I have no critical thinking skills, and I just believe everything I hear. And yada yada. So,
this is like the prima facie case for projection. In other words, they take the talking points, they recite the talking points. Their experts know everything. Our experts know nothing. And yet, her experts or his experts are the ones that have killed 700,000 people. Our experts have saved, 89-90% of the folks if they get to them early enough. Okay. And so the difference, you can look at the statistics. If your experts are killing more people than the Civil War, you really can't call yourself experts. All right. And so the fact that this is going on, it's just the same stuff. It's the same challenge. It's projection. Whatever hatred this person has, whatever information they're trying to throw on us is what they are. I mean, that's what projection is all about. They have the conspiracy theorists. They're the ones that have the misinformation. They're the ones that that drink the Kool-Aid. They're the ones that dismiss everybody else because they can't handle the truth. They just say, well, it's your opinion, or you're a conspiracy theorist, or it's not true because Dr. Fauci said something. Well, Fauci's a liar. Fauci's been lying since he got to a government office, and that's well documented. He killed AIDS patients. He killed beagles in Tunisia. That study with the horrible thing where they're doing the animals. He knew that hydroxychloroquine cured SARS-CoV-1 back in 2005. He designed a virus where he knew the cure, hydroxychloroquine, would cure it. In 2020, he's not stupid enough. I mean, he's cruel enough to release a virus onto the world, with China and with the bioweapons aspects as well. But he's not stupid enough to not know the cure, which he probably takes every day. Why do you think he looks so healthy all the time? He's never missed a day of work. In fact, I can't think of any government bureaucrat, especially in the health bureaucrats, that have reported having COVID. Have you noticed that? How about vaccine executives? Have you noticed any of them getting sick? No. Why? Because they all take hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin.
And they didn't take the vaccine.
Of course not. The Pfizer guy couldn't even go to Israel because he didn't have his own vaccine. Think about that next time you want to inject your arm with things. But I want to get back to David because Dave, that's you made an incredible statement. And I know that's from the heart. And I should probably visit these people too. And the idea that and for people that are listening around the country and around the world, especially our we got a growing audience in Russia. It's our number four destination after the UK, Canada, and Australia. Think about this. Think about the people that you know. Think about the family members you've lost that you probably didn't have to if they had early treatment. Think about the people, and especially in this country, that you're working with, in various professions, the firefighters, the police, the military, the hospital workers, the healthcare workers that are being forced to get something they know is dangerous, but they don't want to lose their job, lose their house, lose their family, lose everything else. I hope they will make a different choice and survive it, because I think these mandates are going to go away fairly soon. I don't think they can maintain this, especially in an election year. Did you hear? Go ahead, Gene.
I think the worst of all is all the people that died last year, COVID, died alone in their hospital rooms, except for maybe a hospital worker that was able to be in there. But how tragic is that? Their families could not say goodbye. They could not see them. They were banned from the room. I think that's the worst. People were in hospital afraid by themselves.
Mm-hmm. And why were they by themselves? I know what I think. Why do you think? Why would they keep the families away from this and not any other disease?
Well, they didn't want him to see what was going on.
They didn't want to take him. They didn't want to take him out of the hospital and get cured. That's what I think.
I think that's the biggest tragedy, not being able to be with a loved one as they were.
Oh, I know. But what I'm saying is they forced remdesivir on them. They denied them early treatment. They did everything possible to kill these people. They put them on ventilators to try and blast the fluid out of their systems, you know, caused by pneumonia and any other infection opportunistic enough to show up when they got COVID. Now, COVID's a real virus. We're not denying the fact that COVID's a real virus, okay? And it really needs treatment. Okay.
Right.
But we also know there are treatments and cures that work in the vast majority of cases. In fact, there's one doctor in Texas. He's lost like nobody, you know, because he's able to get to his people early enough. There are hundreds of studies. There are untold tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people, I'd say, across this country who've been saved from early treatments, you know, and the hospitals, they're paid off by the health professions to get remdesivir. David, do you know if any of these people got remdesivir treatments or are they put on ventilators?
No, so they're not on ventilators, and I don't know whether or not they were given remdesivir, but that's the COVID protocol. So they don't have COVID.
Right.
They've got pulmonary embolisms.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
Blood clots that are being thrown in your lungs and your brain and elsewhere in your body that create an enormous amount of problems. So they're being given blood thinners and that type of treatment, I would assume. So just for the conspiracy theorist angle of this, this is all thought police type stuff. So if you think differently than me, you're a terrorist. If you think differently than the establishment, you're a conspiracy theorist. If you think differently than what we tell you to think, then you're evil and you need to be eliminated. That's where we're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's sad.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah,
very
It's pretty,
and to be
you know,
so close-minded. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know,
go ahead.
We can change that. We can. Because people like Bob and Jack's not going to change. You know what? They're stuck in whatever world they're in, and I don't care. But other people, I think, by just making them more aware, definitely. Yeah, for people to tell me, him to tell me that the numbers, what's wrong with the numbers? The numbers are false, number one. And he just said that, David, only thing you could show him is that 90% of the patients with COVID in the hospital are unvaccinated. See, stuff like this false narrative needs
true.
To stop. Needs
no,
to
I,
stop.
I can show you the exact opposite.
Yeah. Well, what's going on in the hospital? Let's document it. Let's get on the record here on the show. What's going on at Santa Rosa Hospital? How many, you know, vaccine injured DNA crippled people are showing up there? What's going on?
Currently, there is absolutely zero COVID patients in Santa Rosa Hospital. There's a total of 24 COVID patients in the largest hospital in Escambia County. Of those 24, 19 of them have been vaccinated.
And that's a real stat, folks. We're not making this up. This is, you know, and let's expand that to hospitals across the country. So percentage-wise, you're talking like 75% of those who are in the hospitals in our hospital here have received, you know, a DNA injury vaccine. They've had their body crippled, you know, by this substance, whatever's in it, and they're in the hospital. Gene, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was going to say, all we could do is pray for them and just pray that they get better.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest problems we face, though, is that there is a mountain of well-designed propaganda that folks like Bump and Jack can say. They can recite the CDC lines. They can recite the NIH lines. They can say, you know, they can recite the bad numbers and the propaganda that, you know, that everybody in the hospital is, you know, vaccinated, you know, or the quote unvaccinated. I'm not unvaccinated, okay? I'm DNA normal, you know. And in terms of a vaccine as a preventive, I say, you know, there's all kinds of preventives. I got vitamin C, vitamin D3, quercetin. You know, I get out in the sunshine. I'm healthy. I'm exercising. I'm losing weight. I have many, many preventatives. You know, this idea that all roads lead to vaccines is something we've talked about for about a year. This idea that the only pathway to normal. Okay, so who says the government defines normal? That's not their job. We define normal. All right. We define normal every day by how we lead our lives. That to us is normal because we all want to lead normal lives. All right. And so this mountain, like I said earlier, this mountain of propaganda, this incredible, you know, just wall of stuff that they have created that the major news sources keep repeating, like parrot propagandists. I mean, Goebbels would be proud of our media government coalition. Big tech censors anybody who puts anything different. I understand why people think the way they do, because the information they're given, the access that they have to information is completely wrong. But that's because they're only taking information. They're not looking for information. And the difference with all of us is that we are looking for information. We seek out these stories. You know, the reason I always keep going back to March 2nd show that I did rather casually. March 2nd of 2020, I actually March 1st. I'm looking around going, well, let me see, what can I talk about tomorrow? Well, we got this problem. We got this virus that's coming in from, and I knew it came from China because I had Bill Gertz, the Washington Times, you know, foreign correspondent, you know, the foreign policy correspondent on the show. I was fortunate enough to get him for half an hour. He had a bad cold too. It's probably COVID. Anyway, Bill, I shouldn't say about Bill Gertz. I don't know for sure. But anyway, he was on and he was already talking about the Wuhan lab back in February of 2020 before COVID was even really a problem. And so he's talking about all this stuff. And then I heard the first thing I heard from Dr. Fascist, the genocidal psychopathic drug pusher, is that we need vaccines. We need to vaccinate. Well, dude, if the bug's already here, it's too late to vaccinate. Vaccinations are a preemptive measure. You take vaccines before you go into a hazardous area with like dengue or yellow fever or things like that. You take a vaccine before the flu comes around, even though we know those don't work. You know, a vaccine is something you get before. If the bug's already here, it's too late for a vaccine. Yet that's what they had all planned. So the access to information, if you're not looking for it, you're going to get all the wrong stuff because it's already been pre-planned. But if you're actually looking, and like I say, back to that March 2nd show, I looked. I said, well, what are the alternatives to a vaccine? Well, I know. Let's kill the virus. You know, so I started looking for things that kill viruses, and I found drugs that kill viruses. I found viruses that kill viruses. I found viruses and drugs that kill viruses. I found that there are certain drugs that act like a laser rangefinder, you know, that are targeting, that allow drugs to find viruses and kill them even quicker. You know, and this is just one afternoon of just searching. And so I broadcast this on the show March 2nd of 2020. I've still got the show if anybody, you know, I took the link from that and copied it so I could get to it easily. We knew, you know, 2 weeks before the 15 days of spread that there was no pandemic. We knew the cure was chloroquine from the Dieter Raoult study, Dr. Raoult in Marseille, France. We knew as soon as Dr. Zelenko published his studies, we knew that there was no pandemic. We knew this was cured. And anybody that's been listening to the show for the past almost 2 years now knows what we know. Okay, unfortunately, it's not enough of you. We needed like 5 million. We'll get there. But the thing is, we knew. The information was there, but we looked for it. And that's the difference, I think. I'm going to go to David and Gene, and then I'm going to get Paulette, who's calling in a bit early. We'll get her on the line, too. David, what do you think? That's a kind of a long speech by me.
Yeah, it's saddening. It really is. That everything that we do and say can be just dismissed. Because people on our side of the argument can't afford to be wrong. We can't afford to have bad information or misleading information because everything that we say and do is being discredited constantly. I've been in the public view for a few years now. I've never had something that I said publicly be proven false or I have to retract anything. Unlike CNN and MSNBC or MSLSD, whichever one you prefer, and all these other networks, they constantly retract information. They constantly change things that they say. They'll print an article with hydroxychloroquine has no basis in fact. It trumps the conspiracy theory. And within 30 days, the same exact author says, oh, look, we did research studies in hydroxychloroquine saving people's lives. Gee, that's interesting. We are always on the forefront, and you will never hear me speak of a hospital policy or an injury or anything, even a representative that hasn't already been verified, that I don't have inside sources inside of a hospital and looked at the documents and proven. So I challenge anybody if they want to have an open conversation, but this, you're not going to convince those people. So I don't really have a lot of energy for unproductive conversations, because it's the double think. It's oh, I can take my vaccine and it doesn't injure anybody and it's 100% effective, but yes, it does kill some people, and there are some things that it's not good at. And yes, you can still get COVID, but it protects you from COVID. But what kind of nonsense is that?
Yeah.
So true.
Well,
yeah.
And the problem is, go ahead, Jean.
Yeah, Bumpin' Jack is still talking that his doctor in Santa Rosa Hospital said there's 90% of the people in the hospital, they're unvaccinated. Well, the bottom line is there's so many HIPAA rules that you can't go and have open discussions. You know, so that's interesting. But also, the thing is with doctors, we already know. Look at Dr. Fauci, and so many of the mainstream doctors are saying, oh, you need to get vaccinated. All, you know, they're the ones that are pushing a lot of this nonsense, too. It's just really sad, very sad.
Well, let me ask David, speaking of misinformation, and the reason that I don't spend a lot of time with people that make false accusations or insults is because they're not dealing with our information. They can't say that hydroxychloroquine doesn't work, you know, unless they put some, you know, bogus studies. So they just accuse us of spreading false or misleading information. So all this kind of stuff's going on. But you can't convince these people because they don't want to look at the evidence. They don't want to see the information. It's like when someone says, you know, Biden's president, which we know is absolutely false, you know, and they'll say that, well, we'll prove that he's not. Well, I don't have to prove he's not. He has to prove he is. I mean, votes, you know, the vote, not like people. It's not like votes are innocent until proven guilty. They're guilty until proven valid, you know, so it's a different thing. But they're not going to believe your evidence anyway. You could present these people, and I've tried this. I tried this months ago, and this is why I gave up doing it. You know, I'd send people the videos of the Arizona hearings and the presentations and stuff, and they'd say, well, that's not true. Well, if you're not going to believe what's standing you right in the face, the evidence being presented under oath, you're not going to believe anything. So there's no point. But you know, let them lead their lives. They can live in their disillusions. And unfortunately, some of them are going to get killed over their misconceptions. And that's really sad.
And that's a sad thing. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let me, Dave, do you have anything else? Have we missed any issues? I mean, we've been here almost an hour. It's cool. Anything we should have covered that you think we're missing?
Pretty much all we're working on. We're going to continue to reach out to Louis Miguel, see if we can't get some more activity in our area with him, get him some more support up here. I'll work on getting him on the show. And
the
same thing. We should have a list, a Patriot ticket for 2022 by the end of the year. So we're working on that. We've got a couple of really good school board candidates, a couple of good county commissioner candidates. Hopefully we can get some really patriotic, normal, everyday people in these positions and start to turn this ship back in the right direction.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention, Alex Andrade, state representative, you know, if you think he has promise at all, or he might support, you know, a decent no mandate bill, then we should talk to him. Maybe we can get a couple of our medical freedom folks in the area where we can kind of meet, you know, ahead of time, sort of work on some kind of a bill get it. They can talk to their groups. We can talk to, you know, our folks and see if we can get something to him. And we should do that fairly quickly because this legislative session might be coming up. Is it like a week, 2 weeks? Do you have any idea when it's broaching us?
I don't know, no.
Okay. Well, then at least we got a little bit of time. So if the lobbyists are working on the reps and senators from Florida, you know, on their end of it, then we should work, you know, in the district office. So if you have connections with Andrade's office, I've met him briefly. You know, I've had trouble connecting with some of our local representatives. I'm not sure why. I guess they don't get the concept of what we're doing here. So let's go. But if you're talking to him, let's talk to him.
That sounds good.
Okay. All right. Let me let you go play a couple things. I'm going to get to Paulette, who's on the line now for our next hour of scary foods to kill you. We're going to totally change things here and have some fun with nutrition and health. And I've wanted to have an alternative health and nutrition show for quite a while here. So Dave's gone. Dave is, I think he forgot to mention contact stuff, but Dave's one of the co-founders of Santa Rosa Volunteers. And these are the folks that go to the meetings, that carry the signs, that participate in the rallies and do all these wonderful things that I'm not a big rally speech, public person. I don't need to, you know, so I like to do, I like to be behind the scenes writing the legislation, doing my show. And so, but that's where you can reach him. The website is srv1776.com. And I think it's srv1776@protonmail.com if you want to email them, but you can check that out at the SRV website. All right, let's play a couple things, have a little bit of fun here. And which one do I want to do here? Let's do this. Back in a couple of minutes. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
I think for a few seconds there I had my mic off. So if you had a little gap there and wonder what happened, that's what happened, but I'm back. I didn't have it off earlier in the show when I was talking to you and Dave, I hope, right? There wasn't like big gaps when I should have been there? Gene?
No.
Well, this is what happens when you start pushing too many buttons. You know, I have two hands going at once and I'm talking. So one hand on a mouse, you know, hitting buttons. I have another hand typing messages, you know, and I'm talking all at the same time. So you want to talk about multitasking? You know, this show is when I say part of the ADHD radio network, I'm not kidding. That's how that goes. So let's get Paulette Martin on the line here. Now, Paulette joined us yesterday for the first time. We met, I think, like the day before and chatted and, you know, on Facebook, and so we've had a real quick introduction, but got along so well. It's just natural for Action Radio, and so we've been talking. I actually got to visit the video cooking, you know, splendor last night, which was great fun. So we had a whole, you know, panel of folks as Paulette made her gourmet delicacies, and it was cool. It was really cool. So the whole idea is I'm not sure exactly where this report's going to go. We're going to develop it over time. But the title of the show today, Scary Foods That Kill You, I thought was interesting enough to get us going. First thing, Paulette, welcome back to the show. And secondly, I know you tried to get your mic working. There are problems.
I don't think it's my mic. I think I could have talked to you guys all day long on that mic. Unfortunately, I wouldn't hear anything that you said, so I wouldn't know how to respond to it because I couldn't hear anything on your show. Because it said that I was live. It said my mic was working. It said I was connected. Everything was great. Only thing is, didn't hear anything you were saying, and my volume was turned up, so I couldn't hear the show, so obviously I couldn't respond to anything.
Well, you can
try it
partway through here, because what happens a lot of times is that there's one little glitch. If you put your mic in, if you connect to the show and then put your mic in, it doesn't work. You've got to put your mic connected to your computer, then connect to the show. But you were live. I saw your mic connection. I just hadn't called on you yet, just because you know Dave was talking and we're finishing up.
Yeah,
his
that's I know it's weird, and I'm not exactly sure how to correct it, but I do have to say too, I don't know why, but yesterday when I called in on my phone and everything was great. I could hear there as day, and now my phone is crackling. It's like somebody's popping popcorn. So I don't know if that's happening. That or if there's
are you
some
still
kind
listening
of
to the are you still listening to the show online? Do you still have the live broadcast set up on your page, because that might be causing you some grief too?
I did exit out of that. I did end that, so, and I'm actually standing outside, so I don't know why
I know
it would do that.
I know a few days ago my phone was like crackling, and that had never, or my, how I was talking was crackling, and that had never happened before. Also, with when I was having all the computer issues, when I couldn't even, when my mic wasn't working, I couldn't hear anything. So it's just a very interesting, this whole Action Radio thing is very interesting.
No kidding.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Definitely
technology
one of those
is just
half full kinds of people.
Yeah.
You're definitely the half full, you know, because I love the word interesting. It's so interesting. My half empty is more like it's very annoying. I don't like technology. It really gets on my nerves. I mean, it's such a blessing, but it's also so annoying. It's
a blessing and
like
a curse.
When you become an old person, it's hard to like, it's hard to get used to technology. It's very frustrating. Which is actually, that's a great segue into what I want to talk about.
Okay, go for it.
I'm all into brain health right now, okay? Because, you know, first of all, you know, I shared with you probably a little bit yesterday, but, you know, I've had a hypothyroidism since I was 12 years old. And, you know, so thyroid is when your pituitary gland does not send out enough TSH. I have a lack of TSH into your bloodstream through your pituitary gland, which is, directly, you know, attached to your brain and your hypothalamus. And so that affects every single area of your body. And so when that's out of whack, oh my word, I can't even begin to tell you all the problems that you start to have. There are also, problems, related to your cognitive skills too. Okay. So, you know, they can affect all kinds of, you know, areas. And I think when I was younger, and one of the problems with modern medicine, and I say modern medicine as in like, you know, since the 60s, that's really, to me, that's where things really started to change. And in particular, when it comes to like the thyroid, at one time, a natural thyroid, which came from a pig's pituitary, is what they always used. It's called natural thyroid or Omer thyroid. And it mimics not only the T3 and the T4, which are, you know, just basically two, kind of signals to your brain. But anyway, they stopped doing it and they created a synthetic, a synthetic pill. Okay. And when I say they, you know, I hope you know who I'm talking about, the drug companies, right? And
you can say the drug companies, we can speak pretty plainly here. You know, there's what they're calling alternative medicine, which used to be real medicine for, I don't know what, 60,000 years, or more of human civilization, and then modern medicine, which is called, medicine, which came about mostly, if I understand, from John D. Rockefeller and the oil companies when they discovered the petroleum had medicinal qualities, uses, or somehow is in the chemicals made up in most of the drugs, that are going on. And so the definition, this whole fun of Action Radio, we kind of make our own definitions of what goes on. So you want to end drug companies? Listen, I call Anthony Fauci, I call him, Dr. Fascist, a genocidal psychopathic drug pusher. I mean, how much more direct can you get than that? And you notice they never challenged me on it.
The evil's been coming around for a lot longer than, all of this, COVID crap that's going on or whatever. This is what do they say? Nothing new under the sun. It really isn't. And I mean, the thing about it is, there was a time when food—that's how Hippocrates says—food for thy health. Okay, so food was actually our medicine. You know, we actually used food for our medicine. Well, that's becoming difficult in today's day and age because the source of where our food supply is coming from is being tampered with, being messed with.
Yep.
And, we started doing things like that were very unnatural. I mean, like you know, there was a time when you would farm for 6 years, and on the seventh year, you would give the land a break, and you would, you know, store up. And that,
that's
that
interesting.
Break that we,
is that biblical by origin? You know, because we had you work
yes.
for 6 days, and on the Sabbath you rest. So the same
yes.
thing in the farmer's field.
And
okay,
it was,
I've got
the same thing with farm.
Interesting. I got, before you answer, I want to get hold on just a second. I got Lita on the line too, so she's joining us. So Lita,
sure.
your line is live. If you want to join the conversation, she's a nurse, so this might
oh,
be an interesting thing. So yeah, the thing about the show is that people come and go. We build our panel as the show goes on. But food is medicine. I want to go back to that a little bit, because that is a fascinating concept that you know, the natural ingredients, you know, of course, garlic always comes to mind, but different things like that, foods are preventives, foods are nutrition, regulate your body process, foods help certain hormones, foods like, you know, minerals like zinc. We're talking rocks, folks. You're eating rocks, all right? Get used to it. They're good for you, all right? But zinc is a way to prevent all kinds of viral infections, which prevents viruses from replicating. It's fascinating that everything, and I thought about this too, and this is what, you know, sort of formed my original, you know, beliefs in the higher power of God, that everything we need is here. Have you ever noticed that whatever you know, disease is out there, there's a food or some natural herb or substance that counters it. You know, I mean, we all die. Right? I know that's how the world is designed. But pretty much, you know, you look at everything we need, from aluminum, steel, cotton, you know, water, everything that we need for our existence is here. And that doesn't seem like any big, you know, that can't be an accident. But you look at food, people looked at food and herbs and all these different things as just, you know, I don't think there probably was maybe in the native languages or the, you know, indigenous people around the world, they probably didn't have words for food and medicine. It's probably the same word. But it was always, you know, a normal thing that food is not just, you know, energy and nutrition. It's actually, it is your medicine. Have you delved into that?
Yeah.
Have you thought about things like that, Paula? I'm just curious.
I think, too, I just want to make a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Jean. Yep.
That people, and I love this, because we have to ask ourselves, do we eat to live or live to eat?
Yes.
And so I think when you talk about food as being medicine, food, you know, our food is what keeps us alive, that I always question myself, am I eating to live or living to eat? Because that puts things really good in perspective.
Well, can you do both?
Sure.
Paulette?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, just like so many other things, food, you know, it was made to nourish our bodies, but God mm-hmm. also made food to be part of celebrations and to be part of special times of our life. And obviously, you know, some foods and drinks were never meant to be eaten or drank in excess. And, you know, therein lies, you know, the problem with, you know, self-control. And of course we live in an excess culture. I mean, we all get stressed out because we have so much excess. I mean, you know, just have you tried to go buy some deodorant lately? I mean, you know, there's so many choices. It's a crazy amount of choices. Stress is definitely one of the things that affects our cognitive development. I mean, you know, age is a natural shrinker of the hypothalamus. So that's definitely why we decline in cognitive over time. But there are many other things that also affect our cognitive decline. And again, like she said, I mean, really, you know, do we live to eat or do we eat to live? Well, most of us just do both. You know, I mean, but we're
yeah, but they more eat to live. I think more people, it's like a function. Like, well, I don't have time for breakfast. I got to get to work. Well, lunch. Well, I don't have time for lunch, and I'll fall asleep on my desk at 2 o'clock anyway, so I can't have too much lunch. And dinner. Well, I'm tired. I don't really want to cook. You know, and so this whole nutrition thing. This is some of the things I want to explore in this. But it's very cultural that society. You know, like you said before, talking about excess. I mean, our commercial society, our advertising, the propaganda is based on excess. It really is. You know, it convincing you to buy something you don't need, convincing you to eat something that you don't need, convincing you that a packaged, you know, high fructose sugar, flour-induced, bleached, you know, chemical conglomerate of stuff, Soylent Green, is for you. You know, I won't tell you the end of the movie, but convincing people to buy things rather than, you know, apples and pears and avocados and things like that, and, you know, and beef and bacon and whatever else, and eggs, you know. So we've got, you look at the supermarket and you look at the things, the rows and rows of processed stuff, nice.
Yes.
Excuse me, in nice, pretty packages, you know, at eye level. I mean, that's my design. And if you notice that the milk, eggs, you know, the dairy, the vegetables, the produce, they're on the outside aisles. They're always on the outside. The inside aisles are for your potato chips, cakes, cookies, processed stuff, you know, hydrogenated, you know, all the different things that they have for you. That's all in the middle aisles. I don't know.
Well, sure,
I never thought about that
exactly
till just
right
now. Is that by design?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
But I mean, just to go, yeah, well, just to go another step further, because,
okay,
I mean, you know, everybody thinks it's because it's fruit that it's good for you. And I mean, I know like Josie and I always get into it because she eats a lot of fruit. And she thinks that's very healthy. And I mean, and I'm certainly not going to tell you that picking an apple off a tree and eating it is bad for you. That's wonderful. But we were never meant to get so much fructose, which affects our liver. And it also, of course, it spikes our insulin. And the reason why we weren't supposed to in nature get so much fruit is that fruit is seasonal. You have a fruit tree, right? Was that fruit
right
tree good all year long? No, but we can go to the store at any time. And, you know, I can get a mango any day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even live in a place to grow mangoes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or do
yeah
I? I don't know anybody else that has a mango. Yes, you can go, and that's why. So you know, I mean, even if you look at like the pineapples, come completely, ripe, and it's mm-hmm so many things that they do with the fruit, they have to do unnaturally so that they can provide it all the time. Again, excess, whatever we want, when we want it, how we want it, where we want it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, people flip out if you run out of one single produce item, and I know I'm the same way because, of course, you know, being a caterer, you know, I promise things to people, so I flip out if we run out of something. But really, like, if you look at the best, you know, restaurants, which are, you know, what they call farm to table,
mm-hmm,
you know, you're literally, they're growing. Well, you know, guess what? If you do a farm to table restaurant, you run out of stuff. Well, people flip out because we're like children. We're like, oh, well, that's what I expected. And so you should always have an abundant amount and, you know, when I want it, how I want it, where I want it, you know. And that's how we Americans are so crazy. I mean, we live like little spoiled, rotten children. And, you know, we're like the only, you know, the Western diet, what they call the SAD diet, the Western diet,
mm-hmm,
is not a nutritious diet. It is an anti-nutritious diet. And we are the most, for being the most overfed, we are the most malnourished country in the whole world, you know, and we eat like, you know, savages. I mean, I'm reminded of what is the word, oh, I'm just kind of better, you know, the hedonistic word for just overeating, gluttony. That's the word.
Gluttony.
We're
yes
just gluttony.
One of the seven
we're
deadly
sins.
We're
glutton for punishment, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're glutton for punishment, aren't
you're
we?
Eating
well,
yourself to
we
death.
Are.
Yeah.
We are definitely being.
I got a couple of questions for you. I want to hold you up just for a second. I want to see if Lita has a comment, being a nurse, being a health professional. How much nutrition education did you have, and how much nutrition education were you able to give to, you know, folks in the hospital? Just curious.
Well, for me, Greg, thank y'all for having me this morning. They really don't promote it for us nurses because we have a registered dietitian that we can have consult with the patients if we feel like. Now, it is a nurse or doctor's responsibility to go ahead and put an order in, or for the dietitian to be on alert to see a patient if there's some weight loss or excess weight gain or education needed, like for diabetes. But they are pretty good. However, some need to go deeper, like some of the wound care things like that. They do mm-hmm they do help wound care nurses, but me as a person, a lot of times I get on to them, like I kind of push my patients. I challenge and stretch them, especially if I know their habits are creating the
mm-hmm
mess that they're in at the moment. So most of them listen, and some don't. However, it's a choice. And do they want to change? People know that these foods are not good for them, but they choose to do them anyway. And she was right. You were right. It, that 7-year land to rest is in the Bible. It is biblical, a biblical law. It's
you had a feeling.
Leviticus 25. Yeah. And so so I take it upon myself to educate patients, or I'll take it upon myself to consult a dietitian to further educate them. But I encourage them. I talk to them, and it's just part of it with nursing.
Yeah, interesting. I'm getting a little background noise, so I'm wondering, Paulette, are you cooking in your kitchen there or what?
No, I'm sorry. I was just warming my coffee.
Oh, that's okay. Well, if you want to do that, just to let you know,
yeah.
if the dog barks or the cat meows, we're going to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to do something, to mute yourself. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just a little disclaimer here. I have zero dietitian, expertise. Like, I've never studied anything, and I certainly I certainly am not an expert. What I am an expert on my own health,
mm-hmm.
and my own research, my own years and years of research, trying to reverse an autoimmune disorder that I have called Hashimoto's. And it took me years. Modern medicine failed me. General practice medicine failed me. I went to numerous doctors, including an allergist, because I had severe hives all over my body. And in spite, test after batteries of tests, horrible tests. And, everybody saying, oh, you must be allergic to this. You must be allergic to that. No, none of that. And, taking allergy shots and just going through all that. And it was never helping, between that and being subscribed, being told, oh no, you need a synthetic thyroid medicine, and just having mystery weight gain. An 800 calorie diet, doing, cardio an hour a day, and still I'm gaining 30 pounds. It didn't make any sense. Like, how is this happening? And, so I had to do a lot of my own research and become proactive in my health. And I think a lot of people just have a great trust of their doctors. And I'm not saying I don't trust doctors, and they obviously have way more training but what I do know is that some of their training has come from a place of profit and not, knowledge. And anytime you get into a capitalistic, society where profit becomes place where you're trying to heal me and you're from not healing me, well, I got to question some of your, procedures,
up a huge topic, and we're going to pursue this a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
And they just pile on more pills.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too that I find with doctors especially is that, there are doctors who are in perfectly good knowledge and conscience to them and have no problems. My own doctor said, well, you have to get the vaccine. I said, A, it's not a vaccine. B, I'm not going to get it. And they said to me, well, it's time for your annual flu shot. I said, that's impossible. I said, why? I said, because I've never had one. So the records are a little bit off there, And so this assumption that doctors, know stuff, and the profit motive, they're the ones who are giving the shots. They're the ones that are putting people on ventilators. The doctors that are giving people remdesivir. They're some of the most woefully under-knowledged health people in the whole world right now are doctors.
They're being pushed to do that.
Okay, well, let's go call it
the other day. I was discussing this. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You go.
No.
I take turns with people.
It's okay.
Because they were talking about, like, the polio. They're always comparing the polio vaccine. They were like, oh, back then, people did what they were supposed to do, and they got the vaccine to help our health. And I'm like, you know what? That was the same time of America, the polio vaccination. That was the same time when we actually trusted our doctors. What's different now? We don't trust them. Why do we not trust them? Because people are dying that go to see them, and people are not dying that don't go to see them. That's why we start to wonder. We start to be like, okay, why is it that this person goes to one doctor, he prescribes this one thing, and they get better, and then they go to this other doctor, this other hospital, and they're dying. We start to say, hey, we're smart now. We know what's going on. So we don't trust you. We don't believe you. We think there's other things. We can do more research now. We can actually look up your medical papers, you know, and it doesn't take a rocket surgeon to figure out some of the stuff that, hey, you know what? Things are a little hokey here. Let's go back to a time when, you know, things were working. You know, let's go back to things like basic things that we're starting to learn about, you know, what prevents, you know, viruses from, you know, our body's ability to be able to, well, guess what? Fermented foods, the old microbiome, going back to Hippocrates, Hippocrates, which basically said all health is in the gut. And, you know, what they're discovering, even with these COVID patients, is whether you have a healthy microbiome will affect your ability to fight the virus. You know, and we're finding out those basic things like vitamin D, zinc, having a ketogenic diet where your ketones and you're running, your brain is running off, your cells that fight bacteria, that fight viruses, your cells are able to fight those when you have a good microbiome. Okay, so anyways, I know I jumped in there.
No, hold on. I want to get Lita's reaction to that, and I got something too. So we like to take apart the points people make, because the faster you move on, we don't actually get our points covered. And I learned very quickly, you know, on this show that if we don't cover them, we never get back to them. So Lita, did you have a comment on this so far? I'm curious.
About which part?
Okay, I'll take that as a no. Yeah. Well, if you have comment on anything, I like to go kind of go around, you know, everybody gets turns, and of course, Jean can come.
Well, I feel like there's not enough studies on the gut, but that is becoming a big thing, is the gut, because, of course, that's where our food enters and breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're putting trash into our bodies and fake foods that are non-nutritionists, then where is that going to store in the body? Because it doesn't know what to do with it. So, yeah. I mean, to me, that's common sense. So, yes, I'm in agreement with her as far as the gut health and things like that.
Well, it's interesting that everybody has their specialty. Nutritionists are going to work with food. Doctors are going to work with scalpels. You know, people are going to work with things that they're used to working with, and they limit the treatments. You know, I've had a back problem for years and years, but I don't notice it, and it's completely controlled because I go to a chiropractor 3 or 4 times a year. So I'm fine, you know, although at one point in my early 20s, they said, well, you should probably have back surgery. You know, you'll be fine. We'll start cutting here and doing this. I'm like, no, you know, so you really have to be your own doctor. You have to do your own research. You know, I'm not a doctor yet. I've talked about medical stuff, you know, since we first heard of COVID, you know, and I've used studies by this. I can read a study just like a doctor can read a study. Okay. It doesn't take a genius to do that. You know, when people say, well, you can't write legislation. You're not the lawyer. I said, really? Have you seen what lawyers have done to our legal code? And you're saying I have to be them? No, I don't think so. You know, and even though we have a fabulous lawyer on the show here, you know, Jonathan Mosley. So you can be your own expert. There's a tremendous lack of faith in people's own instincts, intuitions, and knowledge. You know, it's like somehow we became a society that had to rely on other experts. Okay. And the whole, one of the big points of the show is that we don't have to rely on other experts. We take what they say and let's put it to the test. You know, every test that goes through logic and reason. Does it make logical sense? Does this make sense, you know, to get back surgery when chiropractors can, you know, help my back and I'm fine? You know, and I had a chiropractor that actually exercised. So he was a Jack LaLanne friend for all those that know him back in the 50s and 60s, the exercise show. So he combined exercise with chiropractic. So not only did I get my back adjusted and aligned properly, I was doing exercises to strengthen the muscles that kept it there. That to me was a very logical, rational treatment as opposed to cutting, you know, back surgery that may or may not work. Okay. So you got to be your own doctor. You know, I had heart surgery after 5 opinions. Okay. Not 2, 5. All right. You know, and people forget that doctors are the third leading cause of death in this country. All right. It's cancer, heart disease, and doctors. And these are the experts you're going to. Now, I did go to them when they justified to me that it made sense to go. But a lot of times it doesn't. You know, so you got to take your own instincts and have the faith in your own instincts to do your own research. You know, I never go see a doctor unless I know pretty much what's wrong with me. So I know what they're saying. Same thing with a car mechanic. You know, if I got a problem with my car, I look up the part and say, well, I think it's this, you know, so I know what I'm talking about. See, you can be your own expert when you do the research. So the fact that Paulette doesn't have a degree in nutrition means nothing to me because she's done the research. you know, mostly a lot of it because of herself. But I'm going to get back to this idea of profit versus knowledge, because somewhere along the way, doctors lost interest in being doctors. They lost interest in studying. They lost interest in, you know, pursuing the healing arts. They lost interest in the basics of the Hippocratic Oath, and they became their own little profit centers. You know, you can make money off healthcare by doing a good job. You don't have to be in the system, as it were. Paulette, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, and just to give you an example, too, they're treating symptoms, not the root causes. So, for instance, let's say if I, you know, if my leg is cut open but and I have a fever as a result of it, you might give me a pill for the fever, but you're still not treating the flesh wound that's on my leg. And you know, obviously that's, you know, that's a huge problem. There is some great research that is being done, because I'm kind of semi going off topic off here, because I know definitely.
We'll get back to scary foods to kill you in a minute. Yeah, because I want to hear some of those.
What's Potaski say? We'll recircle around and we'll circle back to that. But I wanted to bring out really important study, which was done, and actually he won a Nobel Prize for this, and that's his Japanese cell biologist, Yoshinori Oshami. And he won a Nobel Prize in Medicine for 2016 for his research on how cells recycle and renew their content, which is basically...
Say that again?
Okay.
What renews?
Basically, his cells? Research was on how cells recycle and renew their content, which is called autophagy, which is basically fasting activates autophagy. Okay, so everything that he was doing was on fasting. Remember, we were talking about that yesterday.
Yeah.
And this basically autophagy, which is when you're... quote-unquote starving, okay,
right.
Which takes about 24 hours for us to activate autophagy, okay? During that starvation, your cells break down proteins and other cell components and use them for energy, okay? Those
right.
same cells will destroy viruses and bacteria and get rid of damaged structures. It's a process that's critical for cell health, renewal, and survival. And again, so with this guy, when he started studying autophagy that was in yeast, and he found that those genes that were used by higher organisms, including humans, and that the mutations could cause disease, and those animal, plants, and single-cell organisms rely on autophagy to withstand famines, okay? And so his research was during the 80s and the 90s, and it has shown a role in protection against inflammation and diseases like dementia and Parkinson's. I became more interested in fasting when I found out, you know, again, going back to dementia, you know, I have a family history, a small family history of dementia and Alzheimer's. And so, you know, when I can't find my keys, I start to go, uh-oh, this is happening to me. Of course, I don't know that I'm quite there yet, but I am learning about how fasting is not just good for your physical health, but it's also good for your mental health. And this is very, very important, because when you start getting older and you have a difficulty remembering things, I think it's important to know how not only the food that we eat, but also the food that we don't eat. And you know, I think it's wonderful, you know, Greg, that you're doing intermittent fasting. You know, I can tell that you've had some extraordinary physical benefits from that, but you may or may not be aware of the fact of how your cognitive benefits are also there, you know, with the intermittent fasting. And a lot of people...
I want to talk about that for a minute.
Say,
yeah, because I think you're right on. For folks that don't know what's going on, especially off-air conversations, I like to get people caught up. I gained a tremendous amount of weight after open heart surgery. And through stress of getting Action Radio going and, you know, another job I had at the same time, it was pretty crazy. And I lost the weight, then gained it back again. And now I'm losing it. And what I discovered was the thing that works best for me is it's called intermittent fasting. So in other words, I stop eating at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon or earlier, you know, depending on, now it's actually earlier, probably like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because I'm up at 4 for the show. And so, you know, I get really hungry, you know, between like 7 and 10. You know, it's a bit, cold water seems to be the only thing that works. But what I'm finding is I'm losing 3 to 5 pounds a week. I'm feeling far better. And this is going to go on until I get down to, you know, what I think is going to be the ideal weight. It's a little more than the BMI. We should talk about how that is ridiculously low. But the point is, something else is going on too, that I've read about the brain, and we have an Action Radio Mind page. And the reason I have the Mind page is because I love to explore brain issues. So you might, if you're not in the group, let me know, or I'll just invite you. But the whole point of that one of the things I've discovered is that the more you exercise your brain, the longer it lasts and the better it works. It's like anything else. It's like your immune system. It's designed to be exercised. It's designed to fight off, you know, viruses. That's, and if you don't do it, it doesn't work. And my immune system got trained as a tour guide in San Francisco for 8 years when I met people literally from every country on the planet except Antarctica. Or maybe the North Pole. But pretty much everything else, I met people from that, you know, that country or all over the world. And so my immune system's been exposed to, pretty much every nation, at least 150 different countries. So I got a great immune system. You know, even so, I still got, I think, COVID, you know, way back when, briefly, back in January before we knew what it was, January of 2020. But the thing is about the brain, and I want to get Gene and Lita's comment on this too. We got a little background noise too. So you guys, if you have noise in your background, just kind of mute your phone for a bit. And that way that we won't hear it. And then just come on back on when you want to talk. You'll still be able to hear the show. And that way, like I say, dogs bark, cats meow, something's going on, someone's doing something, and we hear it. So we want to kind of limit that a little bit. But your brain, doesn't your brain need exercise? And of course, on this show, I like to think that we deal with topics that are going to stretch your mind. They're going to exercise your brain. And doing this every day, 3 hours a day, you know, is like my mental exercise. And so with a combination of good nutrition, weight loss, intermittent fasting, and being challenged every day by all you folks to do A, the best show, and B, you know, the challenging of my beliefs, all that works. All that works to improve my cognitive abilities, I think. And so that when I'm still doing the show when I'm like 92, you know, I should still have a pretty decent mind left. At least I'm hoping to. Paulette, what do you think?
Yes. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, there are many things that will help your brain health. But I do have to say, I mean, because I was actually listening to there's a couple of guys that I, you know, follow on YouTube just talking about the hypothalamus and, you know, basically all of the things that, you know, can affect it. And, you know, intermittent fasting, you know, can basically reverse your insulin resistance by like 60%. And
ooh,
then if you add to that a healthy
ketogenic
diet, I always have to say healthy ketogenic diet because not everybody who does keto is doing it correctly. There are very important, you know, things that, you know, very important sources of nutrition, you know, that need to be there. But if you do that, you can increase those by 20 to 30% as well. So when you're talking about 90%, by, you know, sticking to this diet. And a lot of people will talk about, well, I can't fast because I have diabetes. That's what they'll say. And type 1 diabetes really has to be monitored if you do that. But type 2 diabetes can be reversed. And type 2 diabetes as well, you know, they can fast as well. And, you know, that intermittent fasting is one of the best ways to reverse insulin resistance.
What exactly is insulin resistance? Because that's one of those buzzwords that's out there.
Oh, okay, yeah. So basically, you know, anytime your body is functioning, okay, you need insulin because insulin is what gives you fuel, okay? And your pancreas makes insulin, right? And your insulin is almost like a key to the cells that, you know, open them up and say, okay, go work, you know, make your body work, okay, make your brain work, you know, give you energy, you know, whatever. Well, the thing about it is with insulin, if you open that little cell, if you use that key too much, I mean, and you almost can think about it like a house, like a key that you're opening your house. If you open your house 3 times a day, eventually the key is going to be like, it's going to stop working. It's going to get rusty. It's going to, you know, need whatever. Well, it's kind of the same way your insulin is supposed to be open up. It's going to open up your cell because your insulin, anytime you consume calories, you're spiking your insulin. Okay. So like if I just woke up, I have coffee. Well, I don't have anything in my coffee that, you know, has calories. So, you know, I'm not going to spike my insulin. But let's just say that I decide that I'm going to eat a little pastry with it. Okay, well, I'm going to spike my insulin. But even if I say to myself, well, you know, it's just going to be a little something. You know, a lot of people, you know, they give some diabetics, they tell them to eat lots of small meals, you know, or eat lots. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all because every time you eat, you wake up those cells. You open that key. Well, over time, that cell gets sick and tired of hearing from it, and it stops working. It stops doing what it's supposed to do. That's when you become resistant. That's when you start putting all kinds of weight, and no matter what you do, you can't seem to lose it.
So the body so let me see if I understand this right. So insulin, you know, turns, I remember the phrase adenine triphosphate comes to mind, ATP. So it turns glucose into energy. I think that's how insulin works.
Yes.
And you guys, okay, good. So I remember that, high school chemistry. And so if you're insulin resistant, what you're saying is the food that you're taking in is not being processed, is not being turned into ATP, is not being turned into energy. So it's then what, being stored as fat? It's just kind of sitting there?
Exactly.
Is that what happens?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Got it.
Exactly. It just,
okay.
Yeah. It just basically it stores as fat. And then that's why you feel tired. That's why you can't mm-hmm. think. That's why you're grumpy. You know, they have those commercials, you know,
grumpy,
with a
me?
Sticker bar.
What?
Like, you know, yeah. Well, and sticker, I mean, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I'm the worst about Snicker bars. I don't know if you've had those peanut butter Snicker bars, but they're definitely a bit naughty.
Are you kidding?
Those one of those little tiny Snicker bars has 15 carbohydrates. You know, there
What's
is
that
something
mean?
That is happening in the medical community now, and that is when people get diabetes, usually they put them on low-carb diet. Why
right.
do they do that? Because carbs are sugar. What does
right.
sugar do? Spike your insulin. That's the worst case of insulin spikes. Because it leads to over insulin.
Getting to our topic then, so scary foods that kill you, sugar would be like the number one.
Right.
Would it?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
So,
I would definitely think. And, you know, people don't really think about it. They think of like, you know, because you hear people talk about, you know, alcohol, you know, drugs, methamphetamine, you know, all these different things. But really, food, I mean, you know, sugar in particular should be up there with drugs. I mean, it's really just as addictive, just as dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
What
does it
really
do?
What
does it do in your system? You take in a whole bunch of sugar. And I want to talk about different forms of sugar. But so basically, let's just say glucose, basic, you know, sugar. They're like if you had coffee and you put 5 spoonfuls of sugar in your coffee, what's that going to
That's
do?
That's how I was raised.
Well, there you go. One lump or two? No, 6. Thank you. Okay. So you got 6 lumps of coffee in your sugar. They don't even have sugar lumps. I don't think people even buy sugar lumps anymore. This is how old this is. But yeah, because we've gotten away from sugar. Sugar causes inflammation. I want to talk about that. And of course, Lita and Gene, you know, feel free to jump in here. But let's talk sugar, and we can get, you know, more dangerous foods. We only have about 18 minutes left. But this is a big topic. And people have to understand the forms of sugar. Sugar is a carbohydrate, which means it has carbon and hydrogen atoms and usually oxygen. You know, formula for glucose, C6H12O6, okay? 6 carbon atoms, 12 hydrogen atoms, 6 oxygen atoms. That's sugar, okay? Carbohydrates, carbs are made up of complex carbohydrates. Starches are even more complex. Your potatoes, okay? So your potatoes have to be broken down into sugar, which is then broken down into, you know, hopefully adenine triphosphate, you know, and gives your cells energy. But complex sugars, starches, you know, fructose, fruit sugar, lactose, milk sugar, there's sugar everywhere. But what I want to find out from you is which are the ones that are good or better, and which are the ones that are going to cause you the most grief. And I want to know the connection, if you know it, between sugar and inflammation, why cholesterol isn't the problem, but inflammation is. Is that a lot for today, or should we just, you know, we can pick it up next week? Tell me about sugar.
A lot of subjects.
Oh, I sure did. Yeah, I do that. I ask impossible questions. Everybody who is on the show knows that. So pick one, pick as many as you want, and tell me about sugar.
Are you going to talk to me or Lita? Because I know you, for a second there, you were asking her about it.
Okay, no. Well, Lita, do you want to join the sugar chat? What do you think?
I'm interested in the foods that kill you. We know sugar's one of them.
Okay.
Just to go over the list of the foods that kill you.
Oh, well, let's do that then. Sometimes we do that. We don't quite get to our topics like we want to. So we'll save the detailed sugar chat for later. That's actually a good point. What else kills you? What are like really bad things out there?
The really, really bad things.
Yeah. I can think of a couple.
Well, you know, I don't think, you know, food, I think food is a slow suicide. It's not, you know, food is not a smoking gun. You don't pop it and die usually. I mean, you know, rhubarb stalk or something like that might do it for you. But really, we're talking about a slow suicide, and it occurs over a period of time. You know, I'm laughing when you're talking about how many scoops of sugar to put in your coffee. Now, just to give an example, my mom, when I was like 3 years old, I mean, like I was a little bitty, I was a toddler when she started giving me coffee. And
oh, that's interesting.
Sugar, tons of milk. You know, I have it, you know, there's a great line in, I don't know if you remember the 80s film with Christian Slater, and it was called True Romance. I'll never forget, there's a scene, I think it's Rosanna Arquette, I don't remember, where he's sitting there in a coffee store in a diner, and she's sitting there drinking her coffee, and she starts pouring the sugar, and she's just pouring it and pouring it and pouring it, and he said, I like a woman that enjoys the finer things in life. And, you know, I'm just laughing because, you know, sugar has just so ingrained in everything we do because it's sweet and it's delicious. And, you know, and when you become an addict, like I was and somewhat still am, I mean, like even when I do fasting, even when I try to have a ketogenic diet, I still get that craving for a candy bar, a chocolate, you know, especially this time of the year, because I made the stupid mistake of buying the Halloween candy early. So I've got it in a big thing. Of,
so you
and,
eat
you know,
it all before the kids get to it?
I'm like, oh, you know, one little candy bar is not going to do anything. Then I found out that one little tiny candy bar is 15 grams of carbohydrates. I'm like, you got to be kidding. And who can eat one? Not me, that's for sure. You got to have four. Four is 60 grams
of carbs.
So what
is it about sugar?
You don't even need that many carbs for a day. That's insane.
What makes it addictive? And I want to actually, and I think about it, I want to cover high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated vegetable oil. So I want to cover a couple of those things while we're talking about this. But what makes sugar addictive? Because we know it's sweet. We know it tastes good. But this, you know, addictive usually has a physically, you know, requirement, a physical requirement that your body has to have it. So how is sugar physically addictive, mentally addictive, both? What is it about it that people want more and more?
Well,
and then food companies keep adding more sugar in it. Say that again?
Yeah, because that's the problem. When your cells get so much insulin and they become resistant, then the cells can't get fuel. So that's when you start craving carbohydrates. Same with your microbiome. That follows completely, because here's the thing. When you eat a lot of your gut has bacteria. It's got good bacteria. It's got bad bacteria. Okay. Now, over time, if you get so much bad bacteria, you can get what they call a leaky gut. Okay. And then all of a sudden, your gut becomes overrun with bad bacteria. I actually have a video on YouTube about the microbiome. I highly encourage you guys to watch it. Again, it's Naughty Tuesday.
Give your website.
Nice. And
what's your website?
Yes, it's pretty cool. And I actually talk about what I call the good guys and the bad guys. So you want to have things that feed the good, because bacteria is actually good to have, because the good guys will fight the bad guys. Okay. And the bad guys are things like, COVID virus, right? So you want to have the good guys. That's why we take probiotics. Guess what the best probiotics are? Fermented food. Hey, we've been making fermented food since the beginning of time, because how do you make fermented food? Salt and water. That's it. Salt and water. Take any vegetable. Take some carrots. Throw some salt water in there. Let it sit out for a few days. You got fermented food. Guess what's inside of that fermented food? You know those little probiotic pills that you go get? It's got all that good bacteria. Eating that is so good for you. That feeds the microbiome. Well, guess what sugar does? Just the opposite. The sugar makes bad guys. The sugar makes bad boys. Well, guess what? When you have bad boys living in your gut, they get hungry. And they're like, give me some food. Give me some sugar. That's what that is literally the bad bacteria in your gut calling out to your brain and saying, hey, give me a candy bar. Do you still have that Snicker bar over there? It's the bad boys. It's the bad boys inside of your gut. They're like, hey, got any of that sugar for me? Because they want to grow. The bad bacteria want to take over your gut and kill you. They do not
like
you.
That analogy.
That's fascinating.
Especially for cancer patients. We try to encourage no sugar, especially for the cancer patients.
Why does it relate to cancer? How does sugar relate to cancer?
Again, it's unlocking the cells.
It feeds them.
That's right. It feeds the cancer. Cancer, you know, can't survive without sugar. The cancer loves sugar. That's how they feed and grow.
So the rise in cancer rate, the dramatic rise in over the last, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, is that directly attributable to the rise in obesity and the storing of sugars in our system?
I would not be an expert to be able to answer that question. I would say probably.
take a look for next week. You know, feel free to write down questions and say, well, Greg asked me this last week. Let me see if I can give you an answer. I mean, feel free to do that because, you know, you're going to be a great resource. And, you know, I ask, like I say, impossible questions, but doesn't mean we can't. I mean, Derek, our financial guy, is like, oh, yeah, let me get back to you next week. Because I ask some ridiculously hard questions to answer. But let's think about that. If sugar feeds cancer, then is the rise in cancer because of obesity and too much sugar on a national level? And if we reduce our sugar content, and which sugars in particular, are we going to be able to fight cancer both individually in our own body and, nationally? Is there a connection, direct connection?
Well,
start with Lita.
What you're asking
Lita for a bit.
Is a direct causation, like what causes what? And
okay.
Really, it's a variety of causes. Because if
okay.
you said, oh, well, if you just banned sugar, would that make cancer go away? No, it would not. Because there are other causes for people having cancer. So I think you can't say, you have to be careful with observational studies. Because what they do is they'll take one thing that happens to be true in every mm-hmm. case or in most cases. And they'll say, well, that must obviously be the cause. But it's not necessarily the cause.
I wasn't trying to make it that direct. I was thinking more that, you know, if cancer is fed by sugar, then if we reduce our sugars, you know, logically we should be able to reduce our cancers. I don't want to make an all or nothing 100% proposition because that's not right.
Right. Absolutely. Of course.
Stress.
Okay. But if you can lower it down a little bit. All right. That's it. I got to play something.
I want to make a comment, though, too, quick.
Yeah, Jean, go ahead.
About food and cancer and health and everything. And I find this so ironic that when people, especially people that are in the hospital and they go home, a lot of times doctors will recommend Ensure. And if you look at Ensure, which is a protein drink, there is so much garbage in there that and my mom was a cancer survivor. And when she had cancer and I just looked at what she ate and I was just like, oh, my God, you know, you can't tell her anything. But it's like I just know what I would do. And the thing is, to this day, I try to get her some decent protein shakes. What does she do? No. Oh, God, no. She let them sit in the corner, would not use them. She goes to Walmart and gets the Walmart brand of Ensure. And I'm just like, Mom. And it's like, exactly. And so I just want to tell people that just watch what you put in your body, because even medical doctors, now I think it's better. But years ago, their amount of nutritional education was virtually none.
Yes. Yes, you're exactly right. And I also think my girlfriend, who was in the hospital with Crohn's disease, which is a horrible autoimmune, they did the same thing. They sent her home with Ensures. And, I mean, you know, sometimes those people are so desperate to get some food in their system because they're like, oh, my God, I'm dying. You know, I can't put anything without throwing it up, without, you know, diarrheaing it out, whatever. They're in so much pain, and it's so awful. It's such an awful, awful autoimmune disorder. But then they give them something like Ensure, which, like you said, is filled with all kind of artificial ingredients. And I think, you know, for me, when you talk about foods that kill, you know, really, I'm going to tell you what I think foods that really kill are. And it's not just sugar. Sugar's one of them. But fake stuff. Fake. Okay, because some people think, well, hey, you know, if I'm not having sugar, is it okay to have Splenda? Is it okay to have some of that pink stuff or that blue stuff or whatever?
So fake sugar is actually worse than real sugar, right? Fake sugar is actually...
Yes, in many ways. I mean, studies have clearly shown that having Diet Coke over Coke is going to make you fatter. Now, how does that make any sense? Because it's less calories. That doesn't make sense. Fake. Again, it goes back to soup. Fake. What's fake?
Is it harder to digest, or
body doesn't know what to do with it?
Huh?
Yes, exactly.
Because it's a chemical; it's artificial.
World, we live in a fake
world. Body doesn't know what to do with it.
Interesting.
Yes.
So, how about honey as an alternative? Like, I put honey in my tea, for example. It's sugar, but it's you know, produces naturally, and I have non-cooked, pasteurized, just regular raw honey, you know, direct from the hive. I got a local.
Local
distributors around here. But it's still a sugar. It's still a sweetener.
It is. However, first of all, the way that your body recognizes honey is not the same as how it does not recognize artificial sweeteners. Okay, because honey in its raw state, okay, which is actually a God-given sweetener, okay, that the Bible talks about all the time, honey is actually has a complete amino acid. Honey is actually good for you. Same with pure maple syrup. Same thing. Same with, believe it or not, blackstrap molasses. Blackstrap molasses is filled with amazing nutrients. Again, you're talking about things that nourish. Now, you don't want to, you know, drink a whole, you know, jar of honey in one setting. Obviously, it can. But again,
a spoonful's not bad. You know,
that is not fake. Fake stuff is what really, really gets you.
Interesting. I want to spend, what I'm going to do is we got about 5 minutes left, and I neglected to play our spot for our webmaster. That's going to take about 2 minutes. So what I want to do is spend, excuse me, a couple of minutes on something that, another thing that we talked about earlier. You mentioned blood thinners. And I know that now with the COVID blood clots, they're pushing blood thinners, and the blood clots are bad. They're artificially induced. I think the blood thinners are artificially trying to get rid of them. Dr. Judy Mikovits said, don't take blood thinners. I think blood thinners almost killed me when my chest filled up with fluid about 3 weeks after heart surgery. Are there natural blood thinner foods? Are there things that, and do we actually, in these chemical ones, are they causing far more problems? I only have about 3 minutes left. We can pick it up next week. But what do you think, Paulette, what do you think of blood thinners? I don't get Lita's opinion in June.
Well, you know, the most natural blood thinner, I hate to say, is wine.
Why would you hate to say it?
You know,
red wine? Red wine especially?
It's wine. Yeah, absolutely. Red wine is the biggest blood thinner that I know of. You know, now if you have other, you know, again, if you have addiction problems or, you know, some people start drinking wine because they think it's so good for the heart, but when they're drinking two bottles a day, you know, they may have other problems. So.
Moderation. Okay. But how about these chemical ones? Do you know anything about them, or Lita, are you familiar with the whys and wherefores?
Well, I inject a lot of people with the blood thinning medications and also the pills, the warfarin. We give the pills and aspirin. Aspirin's a natural, like it's been on the market for forever.
Mm-hmm.
Aspirin's a natural blood thinner, old school pill. But she's right. She's correct as far as alcohol. Like, you're alcoholic, they bleed easy.
Oh, interesting.
Or,
but a small amount of alcohol is a good thing, even though it's a sugar ultimately. So sugar's not bad. So banning sugar is not going to work, or eliminating sugar is going to be impossible anyway. But a certain amount in different forms. Go ahead, Paulette. What do you think?
Oh, no. So I know, just to tell you, I know nothing about blood thinners that are synthetic. I know nothing about them. So that's just definitely an area.
Well,
I
was more into the natural ones.
Expertise.
I heard garlic and onions. Garlic and onions are good, are good circulation things.
Definitely banning sugar. So here's the thing. Let me tell you what. Anytime you get into legislative stuff, okay? So let's just say you got zany. You want to have some crazy bill that said, oh, let's ban sugar, right? Well, you know what's going to happen as a result. And look, this is just the history of our nation, right? Let's just say you get excited. You're like, oh, we're going to ban sugar because it's so bad. We're going to change the world. You know, we're going to make cancer be better, reduce obesity, do all that stuff, right? Well, you know what's going to happen, like, right away. We live in a capitalistic society, and, you know, that has its pros and cons. But one of the cons, unfortunately, is that you're going to have these companies that are like, making money off sugar. Well, they're going to go ballistic when you're going to be worried about their bottom line. I mean, you know, I'm in a business, so if you start trying to ban something that's my bottom line, I'm not going to be happy about that either.
No, I don't want to ban it.
Right away,
I
they're
don't.
Going to do something.
Yeah.
They're either
going
to start threatening people that are making whatever, or they're going to come up with a new product that they can make money off of, you know, which is going to be anti-sugar. I mean, so you're really running up against, you know, the problem with capitalism, and I'm not, believe me when I say I am not down in capitalism, it's the best system, but unfortunately it's not perfect because there are problems that come with it, and that's because we are a for-profit nation, and that has its limitations. And
well, let me hold
so,
you up there
because
I have to. I got
to
hold you up because I got to play something here, and I'll pick this up next week, and we can do more scary foods and more good foods and, you know, the nutritional and the medicinal aspects of all of them. I think it'd be wonderful. Hey, thanks, everybody. Let me play this, and after that, I'll do a quick close.
Okay, awesome.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One.
you can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can be trusted as much as personal recommendations from family and friends. You can increase foot and website traffic. You can do all this, all without paying Google, Facebook, or Instagram one red cent. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. That's besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. besmallbusiness.com. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Yeah, I think it got a little bit louder there. So anyway, I'm going to try and time this a little better next time. But Greg Penglis for Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. It's amazing how fast 3 hours are now going by. And we'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, and 4 o'clock Pacific time. And I'll talk to you all then.